I'd like to call this meeting of the Taney County Planning and Zoning Board of Adjustments to order at this time. And Eddie, would you give us a quorum call?
Ed Clementson.
Present.
Tom Gideon.
Present.
Bob Hanselman.
Present.
Jack Johnston.
Present.
David Nelson.
Present.
Mr. Chairman, we do have a quorum.
All right. Would you give us the explanation for tonight's public hearing procedures?
This is the Taney County Planning Commission Board of Adjustment Hearing Procedures. Today's Board of Adjustment meeting is held to hear variance requests and appeals on decisions made by the County Planning Commission, Taney County Planning Commission. The Board of Adjustment meeting is governed by the Taney County Development Guidance Code. Public hearings are held on each request for appeal, which is filed with the Taney County Planning Commission. I would like at this time to place the Taney County Development Guidance Code in the evidence as Exhibit A. The staff report for each case as Exhibit B. The staff file, including all pertinent information for each case, as Exhibit C. And the Board of Adjustment bylaws as Exhibit D for all cases to be heard at this public hearing. A staff report for each request will be read to the board, followed by a video and any questions for staff. If you would like to comment, you must sign the sheet which is provided at the front of the room. Registration for comment will cease before the hearing begins. When it's your opportunity to comment, your name will be called. Please walk to the podium at the front of the room to address the board. All comments and questions are to be addressed to the board, not to anyone in the audience. All speakers who are not a party to the case shall be limited to 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the chairperson. Anyone who wishes to speak either for or against any case to be heard today must be sworn in.
Thank you, Eddie. And Bob, would you give us the governing statutes?
The Board of Adjustment shall have the following powers, and it shall be its duty. 1. To hear and decide appeals where it is alleged there is an error of law in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by an administrative official in the enforcement of the county zoning regulations. 2. To hear and decide all matters referred to it or which it is required to determine under the zoning regulations adopted by the county commission as herein provided. 3. Where by reason of exceptional narrowness, shallowness, shape, or topography, or other extraordinary or exceptional situation or condition of a specific piece of property, the strict application of any regulation adopted under sections 64.845 to 64.880 would result in peculiar and exceptional difficulties to, or exceptional and demonstrable undue hardship upon the owner of the property as an unreasonable deprivation of use as distinguished from the mere grant of a privilege to authorize upon an appeal relating to the property a variance from the strict application so as to relieve the demonstrable difficulties or hardships, provided the relief can be granted without substantial detriment to the public good and without substantially impairing the intent, purpose, and integrity of the zone plan as embodied in the zoning regulations and map. In exercising the above powers, the board may reverse or affirm wholly or partly, or may modify the order, requirement, decision, or determination appealed from, and may take such order, requirement, decision, or determination as ought to be made, and to that end shall have all the powers of the officer from whom the appeal is taken.
Thank you. And our case tonight on the docket is 09-3, Fountains on Fall Creek. Give us the staff report, please.
This is the staff report for the Fountains on Fall Creek on June 17, 2009, case number 09-3. Public hearing for Fountains on Fall Creek, located at Fall Creek and Country Bluff Road in the Branson Township, Section 12, Township 22, Range 22. The applicant is requesting an appeal of the decision of the Planning Commission to deny the project known as the Fountains on Fall Creek. History is the applicant requesting an appeal of the Planning Commission decision to allow the coming in project with Knight and Rendell and Timeshare, and this decision had this project had been previously approved on September 22, 2006. But the permits expired without extensions, and the applicant applied with a similar project and was denied. General description: the subject property is located off of Fall Creek and Country Bluff Road. The adjoining properties to the request consist of commercial, residential, and agricultural. Review: the proposed site would consist of a mixed-use development containing traditional commercial, condominiums, duplexes, and cabins. Nightly rentals and timeshares are requested on all of the residential and multifamily. Summary: if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this variance, the following request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board: approval of permit number 09-3 and original decision of record adhered to. All other provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code shall be met, and the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days, while the approval shall expire. Real quick, gentlemen, we'll show you a few slides here to bring you up to speed on where we're at. This is the property in question here. This would be Country Bluff Estates. The name of this subdivision has escaped me, gentlemen, but this is Fall Creek Road here. And this property would include, the request includes all of this, and I believe this little piece of property down here also as part of their amenity package. Go to the next one, Dan. Go ahead and go again. And one more time. This is the project as presented to us. I believe this time when this came through, there's very, very minor changes on this. Originally when it came through, there were two exits onto Country Bluff Road here. And I believe those are no longer available to at this particular time to exist. So all the traffic will go out the front of this. But I believe that was the only major change on this that I can think of. Go ahead and go to the next one. What you see here is a the property with the red lines being 600 feet from the property. This is in the area where we've done notification through letters. Of course, the property was posted and the article put in the newspaper stating when the meeting was going to be. This would be the 1,000-foot radius that the county uses to establish compatibility. I will bring to your attention up here, because I know that that's going to come to your attention. This is not Holiday Hills. It is Thousand Hills. They do have a resort area here that does that. So that is, just so you'll have that for reference if you'd like to, that is the 1,000-foot that's mentioned in our code book as far as establishment of compatibility. What you see here is 600-foot. This was every property that touches this the subject property in any way within 600 feet, whether it be a corner of it or whatever. So this is the area that would have been generated to get letters of notification. And then this one will be the thousand foot as we go out with that. Okay? Yes, sir? I'll show you the film. The film will show you just the front of the property here. It is a large parcel, and we did not drive the whole thing this time, so hopefully just to give you an idea of where the property is located, and this would be the front on Fall Creek. Around the area of the property across the street, and as we come back in, this is the area where Country Bluff Estates would be located. It gets kind of shaky when you get up that far. And then we'll swing back around, and of course where you see the wooden fence here and everything is the front of the property on Falford Grove. As we mentioned before, the project came through in 2006, had requested nightly rentals, project was approved. The procedure is that until the project reaches a certain level of finish, the Division III permit has to be renewed on a yearly basis. It can be renewed up to three times. The notification went out to them that the permit needed to be renewed. This would have been, I think, into the third year of that, if I'm not mistaken. At this particular time, the permit did expire. They chose to bring the project back in as, you know, basically the same project, but with new owners at this particular time, and presented the project. The board heard the project, deliberated on it, and the motion was made to deny the project based on incompatibility. The biggest being reason being that they felt that with the whole project being Knightley Rail and timeshare, that it was not compatible with the surrounding area.
All right. Any questions, staff? As I recall, what was the vote on the September the 22nd of 06 from the P&Z Commission?
Give me just a second. I'll get that out here for you. In September 26th of 2006, is that when the original project was approved?
Yes.
The vote was... The vote was unanimous with one abstention.
All right. And you had the vote that was taken in April?
Just a second. Let me see. Mr. Clemson, I'll put my hands on that in just a second.
It's 5-1 with an abstention from memory.
That's what I'm thinking. That I
all right, we'll come back to that if we can then. At this time, I'd like to swear in those that would like to speak for this project or against it. If you'll please rise and raise your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God. Thank you. Who would like to be the lead spokesperson for Fountains? Mr. Wade, are you up?
I would, Mr. Clemson. Thank you. Thank you for hearing us tonight. I represent the owners of this proposed development, Dan and Lori Ruda, and Kendall and Mike Combs. They are the principals of Fountains on Fall Creek, LLC. As you heard from the staff report, this identical development was approved unanimously by the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Planning Commission, in September of 2006. The applicant at the time, which is really the only difference between this application and the last, was Dwight Sprague and his wife. I put in front of you in the exhibit packet that I gave you an affidavit from Mr. Sprague, Mr. Sprague could not be here tonight to tell you about it, but Mr. Sprague wanted to let you know that based on the zoning that he had approved, he sold this property to Mr. and Mrs. Ruda and the Combs for their development, intending that they rely upon this development change. And you can see that the decision of record behind the affidavit, as Mr. Clemenson asked the stat, or Mr. Coxey, the decision of record was filed and recorded with the Taney County Recorder of Deeds, showing that it was approved, and the vote to approve that was unanimous. The application is also attached to the affidavit, which it clearly states that the development was intended for timeshare and nightly rental. So that was the issue before the Planning Commission in 2006. If you look under tab 2, as you know, the Planning Commission and this board videotape the proceedings. In July of 2006, there was a videotape proceeding in which Mr. Sprague gave his initial presentation. That presentation was videotaped. I was given a copy of that, and I transcribed it for you. I highlighted the first question that was asked of Mr. Sprague by the commissioner, but you're going to go into nightly rental and timeshare, all residential and family project. Mr. Sprague answers that is correct. And then Mr. Sprague proceeded to hand out present the materials that he wanted to show the Planning Commission, which they unanimously approved. If you look at tab 12, you can see the site plan that Mr. Sprague passed to the Planning Commission. And that's the site plan that Mr. Coxey put on the overhead. And if you look at tab 13, you will see the identical site plan. The reason that I put exhibit 12 and 13 in your booklet is to show you that the site plan for 2006, unanimous approval, and the site plan for 2009 are identical. There is no change. So, Mr. Coxey, although I think suggested that there were a couple of changes, that's not accurate. There aren't any changes. Mr. Coxey referenced a couple of access points to Country Bluff Drive, which he suggested might not be available. I'm going to get into that in a second. And I think that they are still available.
If I could interject at this time, on what basis or grounds are you making this appeal for? Can we get to that point?
That's where I'm headed. I don't want to waste your time.
Very good.
My contention is that the Planning Commission committed an error of law and that they acted arbitrarily and capriciously in denying the application in 2009. I provided you a legal memorandum, which I think is in your packet of information. And basically, the only reason that I'm standing here is because the owners of the property didn't pull building permits or seek an extension within a year after September 11, 2006. If they had done so, we wouldn't be talking. There wouldn't be all these people in this room. It would be moving forward, and there would be nightly rental and timeshare on this development as approved. We know that there are challenges, and Mr. Paulson will agree that there are challenges with our development code, but it essentially performs two functions. It is a performance-based code in which it rezones property that's proposed to be developed, and it approves the development itself. The law, which I've cited to you in my memorandum, says that for a zoning change, that is a legislative function. There is a great deal of discretion involved in that process. I'm not going to get into who has the authority to do the zoning, but the performance-based zoning does those two things. In this case, the zoning change occurred when the decision of record was filed in September of 2006. It was rezoned mixed-use development. It ended the zoning process. Under the development code, there is a process for changing the zoning. That process did not occur. So no one asked the Planning Commission to rezone the property to its original state, which was presumptively agricultural. So it's been rezoned. So if that's the case, the only issue before the Planning Commission was whether or not the proposed development meets the requirements of the code. So there are two questions that they have to answer to determine that issue. One is, did anything change in the development that would make us go back and look at this proposed development and evaluate it differently? You've seen Exhibits 12 and 13, which I referenced. Nothing changed in the development. In fact, I don't believe there were any changes in the surrounding property surrounding it. So nothing changed there. The second question is, did anything change in the code that would make me change the parameters of the review of the development? The answer to the question, again, is no. There was a height amendment, as we all know, and the height amendment has no real bearing in this case because Mr. Ruta pointed out in the Planning Commission hearing that there aren't going to be buildings in excess of that height restriction. So the two questions that the Planning Commission had to answer were overwhelmingly nothing changed, and there was no change in the code that applies to this particular project. Therefore, the law says you have no discretion. If it meets the code, you must approve it and send it back and let the developer move forward with it, let the public rely on the decision of record that was issued, and allow it to move forward. If you're going to do anything, if you're going to deviate from that process, the cases I've cited, Furlong Companies versus City of Kansas City, Benton versus DeSnook. I don't know how to pronounce that. 230 Southwest 3rd 10. All these cases tell the Planning Commission, zoning commissioners, zoning boards across the state, you don't have discretion. You apply the code. You apply the ordinances that are in effect. And if it meets them, then the project has to be approved. With zoning, there is some discretion. But as I mentioned, the zoning was changed in 2006 when the original permit was issued. As I said, our code is a dual process. It is a zoning and an administrative review of proposed developments. So the zoning was already changed. That's the basis, the legal basis, and the error that the Planning Commission committed in this case. And as Mr. Coxey alluded to, the basis of the denial was nightly rental and timeshare. And as you saw in the exhibits that I referenced, Exhibit 2, the original hearing, you saw the other the Dwight Sprague affidavit, that was clearly before the Planning Commission when the approval occurred originally. And there was nothing that changed. Nobody hit the ball. Nobody suggested it was going to be something different than it originally was. And it was approved unanimously. So by the very nature of this case, it appears subjective and arbitrary for a board in 2006 to unanimously approve it and then a short few years later to reject it when no change occurred. Now, we know that there has been some action change on the Planning Commission's part since 2006, and that is a scoring procedure. Well, the scoring procedure has always been in the code. The county now, applies that scoring. From my review of the hearings, the Planning Commission didn't entertain it. They didn't consider it. They didn't look at it. Mark Ruta is going to stand up and talk about the scoring that was done. And we did a scoring, a self-scoring, and that's under Exhibit 16. And if it had been applied, it would have been a plus 47 based on all the criteria that we applied. So we don't think they relied on that as a basis anyway, but there is an action difference between the two, which again lends itself to suggest a subjective and arbitrary application of the code here. Because we have unanimous approval in 2006. We have denial based on very illusory reasons in 2009. Now, in anticipation of some of the things that I think are going to be brought up tonight about Country Club Estate, or excuse me, the adjoining subdivision Country Bluff Estates and this public road issue, Mr. Coxey suggested that there isn't available access to Country Club Drive. If you'll look at Exhibit 4, 5, 6, and 7, those are copies of the plat for Country Bluff Estates. And I highlighted, if you just look at Exhibit 4, you can see the highlight to the left where the subdivision dedicated the roads in the final plat and one of the replats to the public. If you look under tab 8, Mark Ruta, requested of the Taney County Collector some information about Country Bluff Drive south of Fall Creek Road. And according to Ms. Wyatt, in a letter written to Mr. Ruta, she indicates the road is a public road and not assessed or taxed. And then she attaches to that letter some county document indicating that it's not taxed. I don't know what that means exactly, but I see the $0 on the right-hand column. Under tab 9, we see the 2008-2009 snow removal routes for the city of Branson. The city of Branson maintains those roads and clears them for snow. And if we look under Exhibit 10, we see again the engineering department of the city of Branson, Ms. Lovato, telling Mr. Ruta that Country Bluff Drive is a public street. So However, that information came to Mr. Coxie about Country Bluff Drive not being available for access. I think that information is incorrect.
And I have.
I'll refer the board to Section 228.190 of our Missouri statutes, roads legally established when. And the statute says, in summary, all roads are public roads that have been used as such by the public for 10 years continuously, and upon which there shall have been expended public money or labor for such period. They are legally established public roads. As you can see from the plat, the roads were established in 1993. So I don't think there's any question it's a public road.
Is it your intent then to utilize that access onto that road?
If, absolutely. So, given that status, I don't think there's any difference between the application of 2006 and the application of 2009. In addition to those exhibits I just referred to, there's a May 18, 2009 letter under Exhibit 11 regarding stormwater. And under Exhibit 14, there's a letter from Mr. Van Gilder, who is here in the room with us this evening. He is the works for Public Works, and in 2006, he issued a letter on behalf of the City of Branson saying that the City of Branson was willing to provide sewer services to the development. And he writes, "We understand that development of said property may include approximately 400 condominiums, duplexes, and or cabins, allowing nightly rental and timeshare throughout, in addition to approximately 8 acres of possible future commercial development." Under tab 15, the Western Taney County Fire Protection District provided its letter agreeing to provide fire protection services. When Mr. Ruta presented in 2009, he indicated to the Planning Commission that sewer and water were available either through the City of Branson or, if necessary, through a private treatment plant. Obviously, the preference would be with the City of Branson, and it looks like, according to the evidence, that they have committed to that position, or at least did so. From your perspective, from the Planning Commission's perspective, I think it's important to note that the City of Branson did not come to the Planning Commission and suggest that they would not provide sewer. In fact, I don't think it was even an issue that was discussed in any detail by the Planning Commission based on my review of the transcript. In sum, gentlemen, I want to defer the important, critical, factual issue of compatibility to Mark Ruta, who has worked diligently on this project and knows it inside and out. He has another exhibit that he would like to show you. He's also going to talk about the storm sewer issue briefly, but I think for your decision-making process tonight, it is clear, based on the law that I've shown you in the legal memorandum, that an abuse of discretion occurred here, at least on its face, based on the fact that the project never changed, really one iota, from 2006 to 2009, and based on that, we'd ask you to reverse the decision of the Planning Commission and reaffirm the decision of record issued in 2006 and allow my clients to move forward with the project. Thank you.
Mr. Clemson.
Mr. Coxie.
Before he steps away, if I
yes.
could speak. First of all, the vote you asked me for last time says it was 5 in favor, 1 denial, 1 against. Let's see, 5 in favor, 1 denial, 1 abstention, pardon me. So that was the vote, the last vote that was taken. Also, as Mr. Wade has mentioned, on the original project, we do have letters from the City of Branson and everything, as our code book requires that the project be presented to the local municipality if it's within 1.5 miles of that municipality. I believe that question was asked in the last meeting where this was voted down and was given the indication that they had been notified. I don't know if it was this notification they were referring to, or if they had gone back to the City of Branson at that particular time. But I would be interested in knowing that. And that's probably why we have a large contingency of these people here. As Mr. Wade has mentioned, it was not discussed too much. It was assumed that the city of Branson was going to provide sewer and everything, and as he said, no witness was here, but I don't know at this particular time if the developer did go back to the city of Branson to indicate that they were bringing this project back through anew.
I have one.
Bob?
Are you coming back up, or are you addressing the issue? Is it an error? Are you claiming that it's an error that you even had to come back through? I saw in your brief that you were talking about abandonment, and it had been rezoned.
Another argument made in the brief is that it was, as I pointed out initially, that it was effectively rezoned when the decision of record was filed and recorded with the Taney County Recorder of Deeds. Although the permit process was pursued in 2009, no one asked for an abandonment of the zoning permit. So if a third party goes to the recorder's office and looks up that piece of property, what they'll find is that the property's been rezoned because there's no revocation or abandonment of that recorded permit. So as Bob alluded to, I've also argued that there is no basis for the Planning Commission to even consider rejection of the development because it's been effectively and legally rezoned.
With one exception, our code book does state that all permits, Division 3, Division 2, Division 1, are all issued with the life expectancy of 1 year unless they are renewed or changed, and they do expire after 1 year.
And as I pointed out, there is a dual nature to the code. One is zoning, and the other is administrative review of the development. And I think to Mr. Coxey's point, he's referring to, and I believe that provision of the code relates to administrative review of the development. And as I've been talking mostly tonight, it's about the fact that the development didn't change from 2006 to 2009, so there was no basis or no discretion for the Planning Commission to deny the continuation or the extension of the permit because the development didn't change. So, again, it's a two-pronged argument. The zoning was already done, and that shouldn't have even been considered. And then we think they went beyond their discretion in reviewing the development itself.
We would review the issuance of a Division 3, which is the land use change permit, and had the request come to our office asking after that permit had expired to allow this project to be built, we would say that project is no longer valid because the permit allowing that project, the changing of that land, has now expired.
But once it had been rezoned, it was never rezoned back to the original zoning. Right. There was no action
probably
taken.
Probably if you look right now on the Taney County Assessor's website, you would find that until the development was actually started and buildings were there, that this was not, that no taxation or anything was changed. It was still zoned agricultural as far as the assessor's concerned, if I'm not mistaken.
Here's how I would clarify in your mind the issue that Mr. Coxey's raised. When the decision of record was issued in September of 2006, and my client had come in and asked for an extension between September 2006 and September 2007, there would have been no question asked, and Mr. Coxey would affirm, he would have issued the extension for up to 3 years. Nothing changed. So that answers your question. The only difference between in that instance and the instance before us is the timing. There is a particular provision in the development code that says you can revoke or abandon changed zoning. So Mr. Coxey is obligated under the code to bring that development back to the Planning Commission so they can ensure that the development didn't change, not the zoning. Because the zoning's been recorded with the Recorder of Deeds. And so until somebody revokes that decision of record and files something with the Recorder of Deeds vacating it, it's been rezoned.
If there had been a bond posted for the project, a plat could have been filed with the Recorder's office. And then if the permits then lapsed, you would have a plat with the Recorder's office of this entire subdivision. And then I suppose the position would be that the zoning lapsed and this plat that's been recorded,
my position is not a zoning lapse. The zoning was changed. It's an administrative issue for the Planning Commission to determine whether the development changed. And in this case, it did not. And Eddie did the right thing in bringing it to the Planning Commission for their review. They committed an error of law by overstepping or taking too much discretion in assessing or reassessing this development.
Can I read to you the recorded instrument that Mr. Sprague and his wife signed?
Yes.
It says, in signing this record of decision, I understand that any breach in the terms of the Division 3 record of decision will result in the revocation of this permit. I further agree to abide by and comply with all the requirements of the Taney County Planning Commission and the Development Guidance Code. Now, in my opinion, that is there for a purpose and does have some teeth to it.
I don't disagree with you, and I think that the code certainly can, and I'm not suggesting it's unlawful, to require an applicant to come back to the Planning Commission if the one-year period has not been met. I agree with that. So if you didn't meet the one-year period, you've got to go back and say, look, I didn't meet this deadline because the economy went to heck and I didn't have the ability to develop that property within the year period that I anticipated, and I want this extension. Or I missed it, but I'm not changing anything with regard to development. I think that's what that issue addresses, and that's what is my point. I'm not challenging the fact that there is the right of administrative review and should be if the building permits are not issued within 1 year, because we don't want developers in Taney County developing property differently than they suggested that they would when the Planning Commission approved it originally. But I don't think that the Planning Commission has the right to change the zoning unless they follow the procedures in the code to do so. And when you change the zoning, you don't just affect the developer, you affect the county and those public citizens who rely on that, like the sellers of the property, the Sprags, the buyers of the property who could rely on it and look at the decision of record that was filed and reported, and those other citizens who might be buying property adjacent to it. So,
any questions? Right here.
I'm still a little bit clear. Did the zoning become effective permanently or only run with the original permit?
We would interpret it that if the Division 3 permit, which is the land use change document, stays in effect, that zoning stays in effect. Once if the project then is built out as stated here to 50% or more, that zoning would become permanent. In the event that Division 3 permit expires, because that is in essence that permit grants the zoning change, if it expires, then that particular zoning would not be valid.
Let me ask you a hypothetical then. If there was a bond posted in a plat filed and four homes built, four people occupying those homes, the year came up, the permit lapsed, are you going to have those four people move off of the property?
I'm going to exercise my right to take the bond and make sure they have the infrastructure that they need, and then it will be the responsibility of the developer to either come in and fix that, or my guess is the county, the prosecuting attorney then would have to step in. And
so the permits wouldn't lapse then?
Not if the work has been done, and I'm holding a bond to the effect to guarantee the project.
So the permits wouldn't lapse?
The permit probably would lapse, yes, sir.
So, but it wouldn't change the zoning?
I would make sure the project is finished out as it was on the paper. So, no, sir, the project wouldn't change because now the owners of it might change and everything like that. But I would ensure through the bond that I'm holding that the project is secured and will continue on.
The people who purchased in there would be able to rely on the rezoning?
Yes, sir.
I think Bob made a good point there, and I'll finish that up by reminding the board that zoning changes are a legislative function. So if you're legally going to change the zoning, it has to be some legislative act by the county commission to do that. It can't be an administrative review by Mr. Coxey and the planning commission. So once the zoning's changed, it requires some legislative act on the part of the county to change it back. And Of course, that didn't happen, nor was it requested. So,
The converse of that would be, or inverse of that would be true also in that for the original zoning to be correct, they would have had to take that action also.
I don't think anyone's disputing that the original, or I'm certainly not taking a position that the original decision of record's invalid.
You wouldn't take that position.
Thank you.
Mark, you can speak to the road situation and whatever else.
My name is Mark Ruda. I'm one of the principals of this property. I've provided a couple of copies up here that we're going to attach in the book as exhibits 17, 18, and 19. Okay, we'll talk about those in just a minute. As the reason for denial was a little bit ambiguous, I'm going to address a couple of the issues that were brought up during the public hearing and during the regular meeting where this was voted on. One of those such issues was stormwater runoff by one of the neighboring property owners, and I don't know exactly where they live, but in this area somewhere inside of Country Bluff. Okay. It was suggested, at least that was my interpretation, was that it was suggested that there was some existing stormwater runoff problems in that area, number one, and that there was an existing flowage easement granted to Empire District Electric pertaining to the flooding of the same. Okay, and I guess I want to talk about a couple of those things. First is, in support of that, an Empire District Electric employee got up and spoke and suggested that, yes, there was a flowage easement and, you know, that there was some flooding concern over there. I since talked to Mr. Robert Barchek, the manager of land administration. This is under Exhibit 11 in your packet, okay, and ask him to address this same issue. And specifically, here is my layman's understanding of the whole process. Empire District Electric, or a predecessor thereof, initially built the Power Site Dam not too far from here, okay? And they did that to generate electricity, hydroelectric power, in that purpose. They were additionally going to look at building what is now known as the Table Rock Dam, okay? And at that time that they were looking at that process, they gathered some flowage easements from adjacent property owners that did two things. Number one said, we release Empire Electric from all of the damage that we may have, that Empire District Electric may have done, backing up the water in Taneycomo. And number two, we will allow you a flowage easement on our property in the event that you build Table Rock Dam and further change that flowage, okay? The easement was granted in 1944 and expired in 1974 and was granted by a previous property owner on this parcel here. I think we've gone back to the property owner there that was in question.
Dan, can you bring that up a little closer? Did you have a...
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Ruda, it's right in here.
Okay.
Everything.
Okay, the slides I had there were the house or the area. This is the flowage of the drain canal coming off that property.
Okay. So I guess I would like to address a couple of things. First of all, the flowage easement, if you'll go back and actually look at the recorded document, if you could zoom back out for me, please, and get that. Functionally, the flowage easement that was granted was only for this portion of the property that was down near Lake Taneycomo. Okay. The flowage easement that was granted by the previous property owner of this parcel only granted Empire District Electric an easement to flood this portion of the property. If there was a separate easement that was granted by someone else to Empire District Electric over in some Country Bluff area, number one, that's a separate matter. Okay. Number two, this easement is expired and has long since been expired. Number three, it has nothing to do with flowage in this area right here. Okay. And so in this letter that I received from Empire District Electric, they address some of those issues and say, you know, the employee that spoke in regard to this process was speaking on his own behalf. It is not Empire District's stance that is the case. Okay. To take this step a little bit further, it is specifically a requirement of both Taney County and of the City of Branson, wherever development would would ultimately be done, that there would be stormwater detention required for this property or any other project that would be done. Okay. When we did the concept plan, if you don't mind to put that up there, we schematically addressed this same thing, but did not go through the extensive engineering that would be required to say, here's exactly how much impermeable cover we're creating, and here's how much detention that we need to create, and all of those other things. Functionally, we addressed it and said, yes, this is a low water area. Yes, we would plan to put some lakes in there. Yes, we would plan to give them some freeboard to create some additional capacity. Functionally, I guess I can say this. From a practical matter, here's really the issue. The way that the property sits today, it is 99.9% permeable, the way that it was created when it was created initially. And any water that runs off of that property today is not because of something that I have done and is not something that I am responsible to do. So any stormwater problems that are being incurred down here are not my problem, not my fault, and I cannot be held responsible to fix those problems, okay? If we do develop this, when we do develop this, we will have to do engineering calculations on stormwater detentions. They are schematically proposed right here, and in my opinion, that pretty well covers that matter. But that was discussed over and over and over again during the zoning process, and was an argument against this. So I wanted to go through that in some detail to make sure that my position on that, I guess, was heard. The next thing is compatibility. There was some issues in regard to compatibility of this project, and so I've made a couple of different copies on here. The first one, if we want to go here, is a drawing that kind of looks like this, relatively close, zoomed-up portion of this property, and you can see a lot of the same things on here. One of the things that I can say is specifically note two things. When we start talking about density, 18 for this plan. I want you to note two things. As far as density goes, I'd like to note the adjacent Woodlands property over here, okay? And this property was developed in a relatively similar concept plan, meaning patio homes in the front and condominiums on the back, which is very similar to how we've proposed this development to be. So from a density perspective, we are going relatively close to this, and it matches this building relatively close there. The second is Thousand Hills Golf Course, Thousand Hills Resort, is contiguous to the property here, and this area is specifically zoned commercial and specifically does include timeshare and nightly rental on that property as well. So I guess the next thing that I'll point out is this was originally White River. It was originally a navigable river. There was commerce on this river. When Empire Electric built the dam, they generate power on this river. They are a for-profit company. Okay, there is other commercial operations that go on this lake as well. So I think it can be very clear that the lake adjoining this property is a commercial use. Okay, Thousand Hills over here is a commercial use as well. Okay, so there definitely is commercial use surrounding this property. There are commercial resorts up and down Lake Tanicomo on both sides. Acacia Club Road has some existing commercial resorts over on this side. The city of Branson, what is now the city of Branson, has several. And we'll go through those in some of our next exhibits. Okay. If I can go to the next exhibit, I'm going to mark this exhibit 19 for our packet. It's the one that shows Point Royale. Okay. If you look at this, and if you can zoom out just a little bit further, if you can, I don't know if that's possible or not. But one of the things that I want to specifically note here is that Point Royale, Fall Creek, the Meadows, all of those adjoin Lake Tanicomo on the same side of the lake. Okay, and they have many, many of those same uses and same functions. Okay, there is. until we get zoomed out just a little bit here. So subject property again is right here. As you can see, Point Royale, Fall Creek, all of those similar usage, similar densities, that type of stuff, also on Lake Taneycomo, not that far away. So we can, that's what I wanted to show there. One of the next things I want to show is there are other timeshare resorts in this vicinity as well. There are some at the Falls Village. There are some at Palace View. You know, in this general area, there are many other similar uses, similar zonings. So that's what this one shows. If you go to the next page includes Branson Landing. I'm going to mark this Exhibit 20 for a packet. Branson Landing, again on the same side of the lake, again on Lake Taneycomo, does have nightly rental, allows timeshare, is my understanding there, does have condominiums and high-density areas. So, again, I guess what I'm trying to make several points here is there is as much commercial on this lake as there is anywhere. This property abuts the lake, and so from my perspective, we address the compatibility issue there to a big extent. The last point that I'd like to make is scoring. When we went in to resubmit this project, we got the blank scoring sheet, and that was something that I filled out myself, Exhibit 16 in your packets, to try to figure out kind of where I stand. I self-scored this project. Now, there are some of these that somebody may disagree with my scoring on, but I self-scored this project a positive 47. Okay. The staff scored this as well. I had some issues with some of the things that they had zoned. For example, services through there, fire protection through there, et cetera, et cetera. I brought some of those issues up both in the public meeting and again at the regular hearing to discuss those. Those should be in the minutes. You're welcome to look at those, look at the videos, look at the presentations that I've prepared there. And none of those things were at least not formally taken into account. So those are several of the areas that I wanted to specifically address and say, you know, guys, here are areas of concern that I specifically have as well.
Very good. Any questions for Mark? Mr. Mark?
Real quick, if I could. Yes. We do set with every applicant, as Mr. Root has stated, and we give them a copy of what our scoring form is going to be. Our board, while they may not address that in the meeting, they do get that in their packet every time so they can see. As we mentioned to you in our meetings, anything that you could affect between the concept hearing and the public hearing, we encourage you to do so that we could score our sheet differently. Otherwise, we would have to go on to what we saw or probably worst case scenario. And while you did bring that up several times in the public hearing, I don't believe that was one of the issues for our board. As we explained to you in our meeting, our code book clearly states that this is a tool used by that board to highlight areas that they might need to discuss with you, stormwater being one of those and everything. But a negative score on our scoring sheet does not mean they have to deny the project, nor does a positive score mean that they have to approve the project. Of course, depending on which side of the project you're on or what's going on, you're going to score it differently. You
sure
see it in a different light than
sure
I see it. And we tried to take some of the subjectivity out of it, but Mr. Ruta was aware of all that and everything. They did address, and I believe we talked in the meeting there, of stormwater, and we did inform the neighbors that our code book does state that you cannot increase the volume or the rate of discharge from the property as it now exists. You may increase the duration of it, but the water was still going to flow where it normally flows. You were just not going to be allowed to concentrate that and speed up the flow or the volume going out of there. So that was an issue that you did address in there. So as he has mentioned, the flow of easement was for the lake. It had nothing to do with with the water that runs off of this property or anything like that, or the ability to stop this water and the natural flow of the water off that property.
Thank you. Question, Mr. Ruta. Is there a reason that you all did not sign for the extension on the permit when you received the notice that it was about ready to lapse?
I don't recall receiving it. I don't know. There was no reason other than missight. So.
Okay. Thank you. Since the appellants are still on the floor, I'll call Mike Combs. You're a principal. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Not at this time. My name's Mike Combs. I would just like to say that at the time that we did a contract on the land with the Sprakes, it was under the understanding that the property would be rezoned. If it did not get rezoned, then we would not be interested in purchasing the property. It did get rezoned, so therefore we purchased it. We have a large investment in the property, and at some point when the real estate market comes back, we'd like to develop it. It just hasn't been the last couple of years the best time to do a real estate development, but I think they've stared our position at this time, and I thank you.
All right. Thank you. Call Bill Lennon at this time.
My name is Bill Lennon. I live in Country Bluff Estates, 229. I obviously live right outside of where you get notified in 2006. I'm just past where it was because I wasn't notified, or I probably would have spoke then. It's one of the prettiest pieces of land around, and so, of course, you don't want to see it developed if you live next door to it. But I think everyone living in Country Bluff knew that it was going to be developed eventually, and that's the right of the owners. However, a development that has 400 units, that has nightly rentals, to me it seems like it's just dropped out of space into what I would call a rural area. I used to live in Point Royal, and that got so dense over there. To move out to Country Bluff Estates was actually getting off of the main thoroughfare. And that's important because I have a couple of youngsters, and when they first learn to drive, just driving Fall Creek Road at night is dangerous. It seems like every week I hear something on the news about last night on Fall Creek Road, someone went off to the side, a truck caught fire. It's a dangerous street. It's not like Highway 165 where Point Royal and all of them are. That's a pretty good-sized highway with a middle lane. It's not even Wildwood, where most of the entrance to Thousand Hills takes place. So I would just make the point that with the hills going up and down and the quick turns, someone going and looking for a nightly rental that aren't sure where they are, and someone coming up behind them on a hill, it just adds to the dangerous situation we have on that highway already. That the developments that are there, they don't, as far as I know, don't have the nightly rentals like are being proposed. I may be wrong about that, but they are in a straight stretch of the highway. And this is on a big curve, so I'm speaking that I think that a development along the lines of Country Bluff would be an appropriate use of the property, and that the 400 units with the nightly rentals would not be.
Thank you. Patty Stillman, or Stilleman. Would you spell the last name for us for the record?
S-I-L-L-I-M-A-N.
Thank you.
And I have packets that I'll give you, one for each of you. You may make reference to things that I'm referring to.
We need to remind everybody that you're limited to 5 minutes so that we can...
And I should be very close. We have limited the amount of people that are speaking from our subdivision in order to not take up your time.
Thank you.
Good
evening.
We
want everybody to be heard.
My name is Patty Silliman. I've been a resident in Country Bluff Estates for 14 years. almost since the beginning of its development. I currently own two homes in Country Bluff, one at 262 Garner Court, one at 166 Garner Drive. I would like to speak on behalf of my neighbors, some that couldn't be here and others that are here in the audience, regarding some of the reasons we oppose the rezoning of the 58 acres that adjoins our neighborhood referred to as the Fountains. We strongly ask that this property remain zoned agricultural residential to maintain compatibility with and preserve the safety, lifestyle, and home values of the residents in Country Bluff Estates. We would like it first to be let known that when this project originally was put in front of the County Planning and Zoning Commission in 2006, it was not common knowledge amongst the majority of the homeowners, including myself. Had we known of this proposed plan to rezone this adjoining parcel of land, we would all have been present at that meeting to oppose it as we are now. At that time, the Homeowners Association board for our subdivision evidently had some knowledge of it, as we just came to learn recently. They hired an attorney to go to that public hearing to represent our subdivision. It was obviously ineffective, as we have now come to learn the county approved that zoning change at that time. More recently, I received a public hearing notice by mail indicating the Fountains were applying for reapproval as they had not begun the construction of the development and had missed the allowed extension on September 11, 2007. We would like to thank the County Planning and Zoning Commission for denying their request for reapproval on April 20th of this year, as they saw this rezoning to be non-compatible for this location, as we concur with their decision. In the application from the Fountains to you, the Board of Adjustment, the owner states the reason they were presenting a new zoning application was due to economic conditions. The reason the Fountains is back for reapproval is not due to economic conditions, but Mr. Ruta has failed to follow the process set out by the county by missing his extension deadline. Mr. Ruta's failure to follow the guidelines approved by the county facilitated his predicament. We respectfully submit that he created his own problem by not adhering to process. In essence, he's asking the county to assume the responsibility of fixing a problem of his own creation. This property was, as you will see, for sale on the MLS sheet that I've given you, 203-268, actually being offered for sale by Dan Ruta's real estate company and Mark Ruta as the listing agent. The property listing page shows that it was on the market for 1,047 days and then was expired from the MLS system in January of 2008. The disclosure was never made to the MLS that this property was sold in October of 06, and point of fact was purchased by Dan Ruta himself during the term of the listing. During the time he purchased or was purchasing this property and got it rezoned, the price increased on three different occasions. There's a copy of those papers provided to you as well, which I printed directly from the MLS system. In his own words, while he was marketing this property for over 1,000 days, he suggested, as you will see in the public remarks on MLS sheet 203-268, where he describes the ideal suggestions to a prospective buyer for this property as, and I quote, "It would be perfect for a spacious estate home, single-family development, lots, single-family home construction, multifamily applications, or condominium development. I believe all of those uses fall into the zoning of residential." We find this to be contradictory to his claim to you in his application of appeal, which states this property, quoting his remarks again, was for sale at a price only feasible with commercial use. He marketed and purchased this property as residential, so we find an inconsistency in his current claim. As you can see on the other listing sheet, 323-890, this property is currently for sale, actually has been on the market pretty much since Mr. Ruta purchased it, and reflects in that listing that this property is currently zoned commercial. This would imply that the proposed concept is nothing more than a concept on paper to get the property rezoned, when in reality, if this property is sold to a new buyer, they can literally develop and build any business that falls into the allowed commercial zoning, which is why we are not just opposing the proposed development, but the zoning change itself. The Missouri Revised Statutes, Chapter 64, Section 64, .870, which I've also copied and presented to you, seems clear in defining how a property would qualify for hardship for rezoning to be necessary. Those reasons being by reason of exceptional shallowness, narrowness, shape, or topography, or other extraordinary or exceptional situations or conditions. This property does not fall into that category. Again, no hardship claim can be approved. I am a realtor and have over 20 years' background and experience in property management and real estate sales. In the Taney County Planning and Zoning Guidance Book, Code Book on page 5, it states that one of the purposes of the commission is to conserve and protect property and building values. In my experience, people that are looking at $300,000 to $500,000 homes are not interested in even looking at a home of this caliber if they have timeshares, nightly rentals, or any other commercial business next door or in their backyards. I think you would all agree that commercial zoning of this parcel of land will not improve the property values and will actually make the homes in Country Bluff less attractive, less desirable, and likely would depreciate the value of the entire neighborhood, making it a true hardship when homeowners in Country Bluff are trying to sell their homes, aside for dramatically changing the quality of lifestyle we all currently enjoy in our neighborhood. We have many valid concerns and ask that you recognize the non-compatibility of this proposed development and honor the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission to deny the motion for rezoning. I'll now give the floor to other concerned citizens that will address the main concerns of myself and the homeowners of Country Bluff Estates, as you will see on the petition that is signed by over half of the homeowners in our subdivision. Density, compatibility, traffic, potential safety issues, and overall quality of life. I'd like to ask that those that are here that agree with my presentation from our subdivision, rather than everyone speaking, please show your support at this time. And I thank you, the board, for your time and your consideration.
Just one point. They did not raise the issue of the hardship at all, so what you were quoting us is in the bylaws are in the statutes, but they did not raise that as a reason for their repeal.
Mr. Chairman, that applies to variances and not errors of law, as all correct. Of you know. So,
yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just one point of clarification. In Taney County's performance zoning, we consider the particular piece of property for the particular purpose that is presented to the board. In the event that Mr. Ruta would choose to sell that, the next developer could come in and build this same development, but if he chose to try to change the density, make it all, you know, increase the number of units or the number of buildings or anything like that, he would need to come back before the board. However, sometimes when we have properties that are close to municipalities like this and we approve them, they get accepted into the municipality as what we've approved them, and I don't know exactly what their limitations then would be. But if the project was going to radically change to anything that would be a higher density or perhaps from some kind of multifamily residential into all strip centers or outlet malls or something like that, it would be required to come back before the board.
Thank you, Bert. Question, Bob?
Yeah. You had mentioned that Ruta's had advertised a property for multifamily and condominium on one listing, and then on
it's all on the one when it was actively. You'll see on
well
the first
I'm
one.
Looking at the two things that you gave me, list date on 203-268 is 2017-05, and I don't believe the zoning was changed until September 22nd, 2006. Am I correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
So at the time that they advertised it for family dwellings and multifamily dwellings, it was not a misrepresentation. And then on 9/10/2008, when this new listing came out, they show it as commercial, and that would have been last September, and I don't know, had their permit expired as of that date?
What was the date you gave, sorry, because I don't have a
September of 08.
September 10th.
If they had not requested an extension of the original permit, it would have expired in September of 07.
When were they made aware by you that they needed to
update? We didn't contact them until 08. That was, you know, not something that our office had routinely done until recently. As we begin to track things a little better to try and help, you know, facilitate the developers to stay in compliance with our code book. So something that we started, and we chose to go back a few years to make sure that everybody that had that could come in before our board and explain what was going on and then see about getting their permits renewed. I have looked through the file here just recently to see if there was a request for an extension. I did not pull one out. That would have expired in those 07 of the same date that it was issued in 06.
And since I'm still fuzzy on whether this rezoning is
different order,
active or not active, on 9/10/08, they could have possibly advertised it as commercial, All right, let me just ask the question this way. What county body has the document, you know, attached to their minutes that changed the zoning from agriculture to commercial?
We would have the original approval in our document. Again, we get back to the interpretation of that. Our code and what Mr. Clemson has read would indicate that if you don't stay in compliance with that code, then you lose what was granted. Of course, Mr. Wade would view that differently. We would say we would not go back then and file a new document saying this has not changed, because as I mentioned before, until some construction actually begins out there, the taxes and everything have not changed on that. When somebody came into our office and said, I want to start this project, at that particular time, we would say, this project has expired. In order to start that project, you will need to appear before our board again, which is basically what has happened here.
So right now, it's still agriculture.
We can bring up the beacon on that, and we can tell you how it's being zoned. I mean, it has been taxed.
Actually, there is a recorded document with the recorder's office that has
the decision of record, yes, sir.
That changes it to whatever it was.
Right, under that Division 3 permission.
Subject to the expiration or their performing on the Division 3 application. Right?
However you view that, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Patty.
I just wanted to, he said that, and I just took this straight from your application, there was a hard. It says a hardship is created. That's why I addressed it as a hardship.
I asked him right off the bat, on what grounds were the appeal under, and he did not mention the hardship, even though it might be in the text of it. He didn't mention it.
Currently,
thank you.
The assessor, there is a residence on the property. The assessor has part of the property appraised and assessed as residential, and the rest of it as agricultural. The assessor's office does not normally change, even though he would have an approval and everything until they start some kind of construction on that. He would not change.
Zoning is irrelevant to the assessor's job.
Right, and until the actual use of the land changes.
David.
I have a question. Are you guys required to notify somebody if their permit expires?
No, sir.
Okay. Max Bodine.
Gentlemen, I hope you'll validate the decision made by the Planning and Zoning Commission to refuse to allow this type of development as it's presented. Your attention is invited to the issue of compatibility. By comparison, Country Bluff Estates has a density of slightly less than 2 lots per acre, while Fountain is proposing over 8 times the density. Not only is the density out of relationship, but the type is out of character. Country Bluff is made up of only single-family dwellings, while Fountain's plans to include timeshare and nightly rentals, well outside of compatibility. Finally, page 28 of the code book discourages variation in height as well as density. Please do not allow this commercial venture which is incompatible with its neighbor in three ways, height, density, and commercial use, to adversely affect the existing homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Smith.
My name is Doug Smith. I live at 142 Country Bluff Drive in Country Bluff Estates. The proposed development is essentially in my backyard. My property abuts the proposed Fountains Fall Creek development, and if you overturn the Planning and Zoning Commission, my family's lifestyle is going to change dramatically. I noticed in the Taney County Development Guidance Book, there's a section on page 28. It talks about off-site nuisances, and it states in Section A, off-site nuisances include dust, smoke, odors, noise, vibration, light, glare, and heat. Potential off-site nuisances are encouraged to be mitigated by appropriate means. The means of mitigation shall be presented in detail with the application for a permit. Where it cannot be demonstrated that a potential off-site nuisance will be acceptably mitigated, the development generating that nuisance is discouraged. From what I understand, the plan from 2006 to 2009 was the same. And the nuisance issue was never addressed in the initial plan. So therefore, they didn't submit not only any mitigation, but they didn't address the issue of nuisances that would affect my family. For example, timeshare ownership developments, they have parties for the people that come visit nightly. Right now in Country Bluff, we don't have any issues with noise at all. I love to be able to put my kids out in the backyard in the evening. We listen to the bugs and the birds, and we have a lot of fun, but I don't particularly want to have all that noise, you know, 50 feet away from my home. Then another issue is the safety of my children. If there's a group of guys that come for a nightly timeshare rental and they have a bachelor party, and they're only 50 feet away from my kids, you know, how safe am I going to feel with my kids hanging out in the backyard? And I also don't know what kind of lights they're going to have for their parking lots and their property. You know, my wife is a light sleeper. Lights affect her, certainly. If there are floodlights in the area, that's going to affect us as a family. You know, when you have nightly rentals, you know, there's no checks as far as what kind of people are going to come. And again, you know, it's a whole new ball game. If these are residential single-family homes, you know, we're very welcoming people in Country Bluff. We enjoy the neighborhood, and we would welcome new neighbors that would be responsible. We could get to know. It's a very friendly place, but again, you know, with people coming and going every night, you know, that's a whole different ballgame. So, in summary, they didn't address potential nuisance issues in the 2006 application, which I believe makes their initial application faulty and should have been addressed then and wasn't. So we're addressing it now, and I believe the original application should have been denied just based on that, because it says in the code book that it should be discouraged when those things aren't addressed in detail. So I think that the quality of my family's life is really important, and I think it would decrease based on the zoning and the project as it's proposed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir, when did you move out there?
I moved to Country Bluff in August of 2004.
Thank you.
Switching gears, Ginger Groves.
I live off past this time.
Thank you. Deborah Wilkinson.
Hopkins passed too. Thank you.
Dan Ruda.
I'm Dan Ruda. I'm one of the principals of the property also. You know, one of the questions that kept coming up is why we let it lapse. Obviously, I guess I want to say it more succinctly and specifically. It was an oversight. I didn't mean for it to. One of the things that, if I can ask the planning director, are those notices that it's coming up for renewal, are those sent out certified, return receipt requested?
No, sir. They're not even required to be sent out. That's just done as a courtesy by our office.
To the best of our knowledge, what Mark didn't say, because obviously, if you can imagine, around our office when you have an expensive piece of property and you've got partners, you don't let things like that drop. No one in our, we were in a state of a little bit of change about whose responsibility. Mark and I had bought out a partner of 20-some years a few months before that application expired. You know, we can point fingers all day long. We don't know that we got it. Again, you know, for this meeting, okay, by the code, which is appropriate, and I guess I'd suggest that the county consider doing that also. Granted, they're not required, but for this meeting, we sent out certified letters, okay, and we're required to do that, and that way you know if they got them. Obviously, you know, the property changed hands. Depending on whose name it was in, it possibly could have gone to Dwight, and I'm not saying that it didn't come to us. I can tell you that Mark and John are both credible people, and we did not notice it and didn't realize that it had lapsed until we needed to come back. So I just wanted to address that it wasn't an oversight. We changed our mind. It fell through the crack. So obviously our intentions and the spirit of how we proceeded was very much in good faith, and our coming back here was in good faith. It's not that we're insensitive to our neighbors, as I think Mark has explained, and Brian also. We're not trying to be insensitive. You know, the adjoining property owners did have legal counsel at the earlier meeting, so we very much presumed that that meant that their association was representing all of them. They paid good money. I can't imagine that attorney worked for free. So to say that enough notice was not given would not be the case. A couple of things that were also addressed earlier is that there was no timeshare or nightly rental. Obviously, at Thousand Hills, the condominium project that's within the 1,000 feet is Trend West, which is a publicly held company, and they have both timeshare and nightly rental within the 1,000 feet directly across the street from our specific project. One of the things that I think the city is going to bring up, that they're here representing us, just, I guess, as another citizen, since they do not have jurisdiction in this case, is the road, and specifically whether Fall Creek has the capacity to handle it. In looking at their own traffic studies that we have, and there are several references on Fall Creek, and these are just rough numbers, approximately there's 2,500 cars per day running down Fall Creek Road. The description of that type of road would dictate that type of road can handle up, by their own guidelines, up to 12,000 cars per day. Okay, I think I'm accurate on stating those specific uses. So to say that, you know, whether it's our development or other developments, that road, by their definitions, is capable of handling this project by any means. One of the other things that I guess that has happened since 2006, the first time that this development was approved, is that Fall Creek Road, if you look at the entire stretch from this proposed development to the strip, has been improved immensely and is going to continue to get improved. As you know, the city is right now in the process of cutting the road through between 76 and Roark Creek. What I would anticipate is those folks, what will happen because of that change by the city, not us, is that the folks at Point Royal, Fall Creek, and that entire south side, I would think that Fall Creek Road is going to become a much more desirable road to get to the north side, i.e. to the school system, and that, by far, is going to increase the traffic on their road much more than our proposed development. So, again, we're here. We're not insensitive to our neighbors. We bought the property for one purpose, and that was to develop it. We tried to follow in good faith. When we had talked to the Spraggs and contracted with them, the contract was subject to that zoning being approved, which I don't think is a question, and Dwight reaffirmed that. And so when we talked to the Spraggs at that time, we said, Dwight and Linda, you know, you bought that, as Patty brought up, which was the case. He was looking at putting an estate home on the property. No, I think that's kind of common knowledge. And so we very much understood that, which was the reason, as Patty brought up, that it was at that point in time we had listed the property and we were working for our client, the Spraggs, and that's why it was advertised that way. So, you know, we had told the Spraggs that we did not want to upset the apple cart. We appreciate other people's rights. We appreciate our rights. And I guess to address, because the city is here, which is an unusual circumstance, to the best of my knowledge, it's the first time that the city of Branson has ever, I've been over here many times, and I've talked to other developers, and it's the first time that, to the best of my knowledge, they've shown up at an event like this, which is can be somewhat overbearing. But it wasn't our intent to do anything but to be a good neighbor and to proceed, but at the same time to protect and to continue to develop the property as we had originally intended to. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Okay. Your presumption of why they're here may be incorrect. I'm not sure either until we hear from them.
Okay.
Okay. Chris Meyer. I hope you can paraphrase. Did I get two for a reason?
My name is Chris Meyer, and I'm president of the Country Bluff Property Owners Association. Now, as you have already heard tonight, there are several reasons that I believe this project was not approved by the Taney County Planning and Zoning Board. The density of buildings, one house to 3.6 from their standpoint, compatibility, height, type of use, off-site nuisances, and safety of residents. Overall, the original plan was flawed, and when it expired and had to come back to planning and zoning, we were able to point out these errors with the plan that was submitted. The Taney County Planning and Zoning did not deny this project because the applicant had changed, as Mr. Wade put in his conclusion in his legal memo to this board. Let me just give you one example of their flawed plan. If you take a look at their existing plan, it shows two exits onto Country Bluff Drive. The previous attorney brought this up. These exits are not onto a public road, but rather a private road at the entrance of the development. I've included the documentation to support this from the assessor's office, and it's very easy to also see on the map that I've laid there before you that shows that this road is an actual parcel. We currently pay to have the sides maintained. We've never asked the city to reseal it or do anything of that nature. So based on the evidence I have, it would suggest that we own that highlighted parcel that I show you there. The other, one of the main reasons I think they want those two access points is because then I think that they have problems with either hammerheads or cul-de-sacs in their development as well. The other aspect of, in looking at the code, and I might be wrong, but it talks about a 40-foot natural buffer. In some cases, there's a 30-foot buffer, while in other cases, there's a 50-foot buffer. So I have concerns related to that. We understand the need of the developers to put something on this property to recoup their cost and make a decent return. After the planning and zoning meeting and the project was denied, I proactively sent emails to both Mark Root and Mike Combs suggesting we get together to create a win-win situation for both parties involved. I never heard from them, so they rejected, I guess, our offer to work together. And it's really an unfortunate situation. It would be much better to create a win-win situation for all involved. Instead, they hired an attorney to write a lengthy legal document telling you why you supposedly have to approve this project. Yet he failed to mention on page 28 all the compatibility issues. On 4.9, we looked at earlier the permit extensions. It does talk about that if the project as approved cannot be completed before expiration of the permit, an extension can be requested. The developer did not ask for an extension before the expiration of the permit or even close to the time it expired. And I believe there's both an objective and a subjective portion to this code. The code was designed for this very reason today, so that a project that is not started cannot go on indefinitely. Commissioners change, staffs change. People are human and they make mistakes. New evidence can be provided. Conditions change. We really live in a world of constant change today, and these changes must be taken into account. I believe the current Planning and Zoning Board were able to weigh new evidence that was provided by us as concerned citizens. They ultimately made the right decision. The first time the project was approved was really based on a faulty plan at best. I've also included in your packet pictures of the homes that are directly adjacent to this project. I would say all of these homes are in the mid-$300,000 to $500,000 homes. These are the properties that will be most affected by this development. You also see in there a lot of the different road shots as well. The developer attempts to make a great case about compatibility with land across the street from him. Yet there's really probably about 20 acres of land between him and the timeshare that he is referencing, which sits in the middle of a golf course, so to say, and that timeshare has probably around 100 units based on the count that I was able to determine. It can't be seen from the road, nor does it have high-priced homes so close to it. I would like to talk about traffic safety for just a moment. I'm also going to pass out these photos that I've got of just a recent wreck and also the Branson traffic count summary that was referenced earlier. Unfortunately, I just got those, so I don't have additional copies. On those. Today, Fall Creek Road is both in the Branson city limits and the county. The city of Branson has made significant improvements to their portion of the road. They've done this through what I call center, turn lane, sidewalks, etc. The county has not upgraded their portion of the road to the level of the city. There are several dangerous corners. One of them, or actually two of them, are in the area of question. Those traveling this road and heading toward Highway 76 will face several dangerous corners. I've also provided for you reports from the Missouri Highway Patrol for the years 2000 and 2008. Just last weekend, in fact, there was a big wreck on Fall Creek Road. And you'll see the pictures that I'm passing around. There have been recent wrecks right in front of this development. In the pictures that you have, I took the pictures of the flowers near the tree where an 18-year-old boy died last year as he was trying to miss a bus. He is one of two people that died on Fall Creek Road. In 2008, there were at least 15 injuries with 53 accidents of some sort, and in 2007, there were 51 accidents with 20 injuries of some sort, according to the Missouri Highway Patrol. According to David Miller, City of Branson engineer, this project will generate around 3,000 more vehicle trips on Fall Creek. Is it possible to handle this increase in cars? Well, it might be. But if just one more person dies because of the increased traffic, was it worth it? Turning into Country Bluff Estates from Fall Creek can be very dangerous, as well as their proposed area as well. I think it would be very wise to have a detailed analysis and recommendation from the county engineers on the development and road What would his recommendations and thoughts be on this? In conclusion, the vote by planning and zoning to deny the project was the only logical one to make when looking at all the evidence. It is not compatible with our existing single-family residential in both density, use compatibility, or height. If we were to protect property values and uphold one of the main purposes of the code, then it must be denied. Is it right to put a 372-unit timeshare resort behind a nice residential subdivision? Is it right to subject current homeowners to nuisances that will be created? And is it right to lower the sellability and thus value of current homeowners? I really believe you know the answer to those questions. Thank you for your time and attention in this matter.
Any questions? Thank you. Dean Krudoff?
Oh, yeah, I do have one. Save me some time. Could you give me the legal description of the road?
I think that's what I got from the assessor's office is...
Which?
This is what I got from the assessor's office. From. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Clemson, if I could, one more time. It was made mention of the roads inside the project not having cul-de-sacs or hammerheads or anything like that. In this particular type of development, which we, for lack of a better word, condominium style of ownership, the interior of the project is governed with our parking lot standards. There are some rules there as far as the access roads and everything, the width of them, continuous loop parking, things like that, but it does not hold to the road standards that we would a single-family residential subdivision.
Thank you. Dean, would you spell your last name?
I'd be happy to. It's spelled K-R-U-I-T-H-O-F.
Did I come close?
You did very well.
All right, thank you.
I'm Dean Krudoff. I'm the city administrator with the city of Branson. I'd like to point out that I haven't even had my first anniversary yet with the city of Branson. I'd also like to introduce Mayor Presley, who's just had her second anniversary as mayor of our city. Garrett Anderson, sitting next to him, who is our new economic development director, who's in his third week. Larry Van Gelder, our public works director. And Tim Davis, our city attorney, is in the back, who's also been our city attorney for about 2 months. Mr. Ruta indicated that it's unusual for the city to be at a function like this. And I think the reason I'm talking about the short period of time that we've been here is that things with the city are now different. And we have looked at this development, and we do have some concerns about that, and we wanted to come and express our concerns to you. We recognize this may not have happened before, but I do know that Jim Lawson, our new planning and zoning director, who just is out of town, otherwise he'd be here today, has started a conversation with Mr. Coxey, and I think we'll be working with him very closely on developments like this that are within our jurisdictional area or potentially within our jurisdictional area. I'd like to just point out a couple of areas that have not been brought up tonight in regard to how the city views this. I'm not going to be repeating the concerns that the neighborhood has, but I do want to talk about the fact that if this property is to be receiving water and sewer from the city, they will have to execute an annexation agreement with the city. In order to execute an annexation agreement with us, what we're concerned about is that this property is being proposed right now under the city, if it comes into the city, is contrary to our 2003 comprehensive plan. And basically, our 2003 comprehensive plan views this area as medium density residential. We would basically define this as things like duplexes, zero lot line homes, certainly not high rise condos. This would not be something that we would be viewing favorably with our zoning plan. And again, we have our comprehensive plan recognizing that one day this may be coming into the city of Branson, and of course it is immediately next to the city of Branson in one of our best neighborhoods. We're also concerned that if this is annexed, would it become commercial property when annexed into the city of Branson? And as such, would all of the use by rights for commercial properties go along with that? And if it were developed commercial by our standards, that would require a much greater setback. So the setback being proposed right now for this development would have to be expanded under our rules and regulations if it were a commercial development. So, yes, we are very concerned about the incompatibility, because in a planning process, you're not looking at what exists right now, but you also have to look at what will be existing in the future. And, again, for extending utilities in this area, we anticipate that this area would be zoned, and we feel we should be considering how this would be zoned if it were in the city of Branson. The decisions that you're making will eventually be affecting us once it's in our city limits, and we feel there should be that type of compatibility with our rules and our regulations. So very simply, we're here right now to stand with your Planning and Zoning Commission and with our citizens in recommending that this be denied.
Since you've been fairly new, when is in your crystal ball this annexation going to take place? I guess it's really kind of a moot point because you really don't have it annexed now. And even if you did annex in the future and the development was approved and they were already building on it, they were already there, your annexation guides on the setbacks and streets and what have you wouldn't override this particular development if it's already in place.
Well, again, I think that's our point, is that you're right now talking about overturning some type of an annexation. We're talking about the fact that in the future, for annexations of this nature, with the requirements that there be some notification to the city about some type of an annexation like this, we do feel that we should have some input to you with what our standards would be and how we believe that would be developed. Because, again, ultimately, especially if this is going to be receiving city water and sewer, it would have to come into the city.
So are you saying that, given this plan, the city of Branson would not supply sewer service?
What we are saying is that what you would be approving at this point, if we were going to be providing water and sewer service, we would be bringing something into the city that is contrary to our long-term plan. We're not sitting here necessarily saying that we're threatening yes or no that we would provide water and sewer, but we are very concerned with the fact that if they're going to have our sewer, they will have to come into our city limits. And the plan that's being proposed to you now would not be meeting our guidelines.
Well, I'm just trying to get this into a time frame because the developers have said that they are suggesting that they will have city sewer.
The developers have a letter that was signed by Mr. Van Gelder, I believe, back in 2006 that indicated that water and sewer is available. It also indicated that it would require an annexation agreement. So what we're saying is they would have to execute an annexation agreement with us, and as such, under those terms, would annex into the city. And by annexing into the city, our concern is that this is basically an incompatible use by our plans.
Okay, so they would have to run the pipe before they build the buildings, right?
Well, they would have to run the pipe because they would have to have a plan as to where the sewage is going to go.
My question is, do you got plans or something that we are not haven't seen that you know how this is going to take place or what?
Yes, sir. Everything is based on what their plans are and approaching Mr. Van Gelder about 3 years ago.
And nobody's got a full working set of plans on this. We're
no.
just going off of renderings.
Exactly.
Of what? So, okay.
Yeah, we don't have a full set of plans, so that's our point in that if we're going to be starting to talk about providing utilities to this, we have a lot of work to do. And our concern then is we're going to be taking a look at how this property would be developed with the fact that it's eventually going to be within the city limits.
Thank you.
Question you may not be able to answer, but has the plan or any rules of Branson changed since the letter was written from the Water Department?
I don't believe they have, but again, our comprehensive plan for this area was adopted in 2003.
Okay. So but between the time of the letter and now, there have not been any major readjustments to the plan, to the sewer plans?
To our sewer plans, no.
Okay.
But we're going to be undertaking a sewer study. Actually, our Board of Aldermen will be considering a new sewage study for rates and other processes. We'll be approving that actually next Tuesday. So we're in that process of looking at it.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is it Doug Fast? I'll have to swear you in, Steve. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth of God?
I do.
Thank you.
I'll make this as short as possible, try to keep it within the 5 minutes. I've just been surprised by the comment that Citi made, because if you read between the lines, what they're actually saying is their tentacles just went out a lot farther tonight. What they're actually saying is that they'll make an annexation agreement read, in effect, that they can absolutely not allow a project like this to go forward. And that seems strange to me. I mean, after all, they're the TIF capital of the United States of America. Seems like to me they got plenty to take care of without putting those tentacles on, but that's not what I come here to talk about. The fundamental issue is ERA law. Now, some of you may or may not know that I caused an action against Stone County, and there were several issues that the court found in our favor. It took 4 years of litigation, took over $100,000 in legal expense. We felt we was right, and ultimately the court found in our favor that we were right. One of those issues, which is a fundamental point here tonight, and what we've really heard tonight is a lot of issues that would normally occur in a public hearing at a planning and zoning meeting. So, and I'm not saying that the Board of Adjustments shouldn't allow that kind of comments, but I'll keep my comments to specific issues. One of the issues the court found, significant issues, was it's not the responsibility of the developer to renew a permit. It's the responsibility of the county administration to bring an expiring permit to the commission in a public meeting and reverse it. Judge also found that the time limit on a zoning issue is immaterial, because once the property is zoned a certain way, that it's zoned. And that was one of the issues that we brought up, and the judge found in our favor. The other important issue is zoning. And as you know, I'm sure you do know, Stone County is putting planning and zoning back on the ballot in August because the judge found their code invalid, essentially. This code mirrors Stone County's code. Now, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't have any financial interest in this property at all. Okay? Doesn't really make any difference to me whether this particular project is approved or not approved tonight at all. What does make an issue to me are the fundamental issues that you face here tonight is, A, whether the developer has the responsibility, or whether you either can, under state statute, judge found that you couldn't in the Stone County case, deny or not renew a permit, number one. And then zoning. Now, when zoning in Stone County and Taney County was approved, it was approved under the basis of zoning districts. The county's never done it. They've used spot zoning for years. I've been an advocate of having a countywide zoning map for 15 years. So you're going to have these kind of issues time and time again when you don't have a zoning map and planning and zoning, continues to do this obscene policy of doing spot zoning. It's archaic. It's illegal. It's invalid. So the real issue here is whether or not, which I don't feel like the county had the right to not renew the permit, even if it was necessary. And the other issue is the spot zoning issue. Two very important issues. The third issue that some of you may know, that the
judge found in Stone County was the cost for permits. And that was the original reason we went to court. Is the state statute's very clear at the time in Stone County, you can only charge the amount for a building permit as it costs to execute the permit or whatever cost you have associated on the inspection of a permit. Now, I realize different class counties have different statutes, but that was the one at the time.
There has to be a rational nexus between the cost of the service
Correct.
And the fee charged.
That's right. So, again, they had different charges. A bigger house paid more of a permit fee and so forth. And I have the distinction of buying the first truck that the inspection that Stone County had to make the inspections through the permit fees that I paid. But the judge found that their permitting process and the fees associated with that were also incorrect, and we was awarded whatever the amount of the permit fees we paid during that period, we was awarded a credit back. So I'm not here for any other reason. This project is immaterial to me. I don't have anything to do, but the very essence of the 12-month expiration of a permit and your own code, think about this just a minute. Stonebridge Village, I went to zoning in January of 2000. And if your code was exercised at Stonebridge Village, I would have had to, so far, I'd have had to go for three-year extensions.
Unless you have 50% of your infrastructure in.
Don't have it.
Well, then you would.
Well, think about this. You know, we made mention, one of the people that spoke made mention that, well, aldermen and zoning and BOO members change. That's exactly right. Think about what position I'd be in or what I would have to do if 2 years from now they decided not to reissue an extension. And I'm still only 40 today after 10 years of the development. I'm less than 30% developed. So this may work. Some of these rules may work if you're doing a 40-house subdivision. But clearly, developments of the future, for the most part, are not going to be 40-lot subdivisions. For that purpose, I think that it'd be well advised if the Board of Adjustments would not affirm the denial of this and go on about their business. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Steve Redford. Record. Any further comments that anybody has for anybody?
Can I make a response to the city's comments?
I was going to allow one of you to have the last call here, so you all decide which one you want to do.
Now,
time is the essence.
Again, I'm Dan Ruda. I'm one of the principals of the project. I guess to kind of go back with the city's comments again and summing up kind of where we're at. As I think that Dean said, the master plan that he was referring to that the city had was prior to the time, by several years, that we got the first P&Z zoning for this piece of property. Meaning at that point in time, as was the case at that time when we got it, and is now, every time this is in the paper, okay, there's a public notice. The city, as well as the county, are very much professionals. I got a herd of people down there to monitor us developers, I assure you. Okay, they know how to read the paper, too. So the point of it is they were not there. Okay, and by the definition that I understood that Dean described, is that it's not been changed since that date. My comment is, what I would like to draw to this group's attention is specifically the letter that Dean referred to. It's an exhibit, okay, that's in your document. Okay, it's a document just for the group's, I guess it's 14.
It's dated, as Dean referenced, August the 9th, 2006. And my comment of wanting to address this letter with the spirit of the problem, and I'm not trying to be adversarial with the city. I live in the city. I've been here for 30 years. Okay? I love this community. It's my home. I'm not trying to take them on. I want to work with them. But at the same time, when our group makes a major financial investment and we get a decision and we continue based on that, okay, we don't think that it's right, equitable, or appropriate that it gets changed. And to draw this point home, I'm going to reach just a little bit, and I'll try to make it quick. This letter specifically states, and I'm not going to read it word for word, but it specifically states, and it is on the City of Branson letterhead, and it is signed by Larry Van Gilder, who's been with the city a long, long time. And I can tell you he is a quality individual, okay? And this group and we had every expectation, and I believe the city, even to this day, would say that we could rely on his signature. I would be surprised if they don't feel that way. But it talks about this, and it talks, as Dean said, that it would require an annexation. My comment is, what this letter talks about is very much the norm that has been done and that we as a developer understand that you go through the process and that you annex and that you'll come under the city's regulations. We've experienced that several times, understand it, and appreciate it. The point of the agreement is that it specifically says that the city has the capacity to hook us on. It goes on to specifically say that we understand, this is a quote, we understand the development of said property may include approximately 400 condominiums, duplexes, or cabins, allowing nightly rental, timeshare throughout, an additional 8 acres of commercial property on the development. My comment of making that is to come back, as Dean said, and this isn't a fault of the city, but the point of it is we have to know what to rely on when we go out and spend several million dollars. We went through the process. We all had the rights to come up and talk about it. It got approved. Okay? We have to understand how we're going to develop going forward. We don't mind following the rules as long as everybody delineates what they are and we stick to them, including the city. My comment is, the reason that we can all think that we can rely on this, as we both know, to draw up an example of recent, within the last few years, that we all think is important, but we all as a community spent millions of dollars, was the Bee Creek extension. This county spent a large number, I don't want to misquote it, it's in the millions, of dollars extending sewer lines up through the Bee Creek extension. The city of Branson used its facilities and gave that line that is hooked on capacity for little or no charge. So if you're a developer and you see that, and I go to the public meetings and I hear that, and I know that happened, and I understand the reason. We're worried about our environment. Okay, why wouldn't I, as a developer, knowing that and knowing and seeing it and being involved in this on an ongoing basis, understand that that means that this letter, I can stand by it. And that it's important that we do. And that if it changes, that the people that have a permit and have an understanding about how they can develop can continue. And that that applies to the future so that they do not have a change of the rules in the middle of the game. Thank you.
That'll conclude the public format of the meeting. We'll open this to the board now for discussion and consideration. David, speak up so everybody can hear.
The appeal is based on error in law. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what can we consider after everything we've heard? Was there an error in law in the decision of the planning board?
You're asking me?
to make some opinion. I don't want to make your decision for you.
No, I don't want to make my decision, but...
You know, if I give you legal advice and you find the opposite way, it can be used against you rather than in writing. I think significant issues, I can go this far, significant issues have been raised by those who claim that there's an error of law. They've made claims of error of law, those being that if you're, let me just recap quickly, that the board that voted 7-0 then voted 5-1 with no substantial change in anything, saying that it's arbitrary and capricious. That would be an error of law. They're basically saying that there was not substantial evidence and competent evidence to support the decision of the Planning and Zoning Board recently when they reversed the earlier decision. And they also claimed that I believe that there was an error of law, even in the brief, even being forced to go to the Planning and Zoning Commission again to have the permit renewed once it had been rezoned. It was rezoned, in their opinion, and that's a significant legal issue. And they raised some other significant legal issues. And it's up to you to decide whether you believe that there's been an error of law. And I certainly don't want to...
No,
if you want a written opinion sometime, okay.
Jesse?
Yes, sir.
In addition to just the physical drawings that were presented, was there any other testimony to the compatibility issues presented for and against infrastructures, facilities, sewer, police and fire, and all those? Were any of those issues additionally addressed as part of the issue of approval or disapproval?
Specifically, what the board said as far as their decision of record was that they deny, let me read this to you, the motion was based upon density and incompatibility to the surrounding area. So that's what they were focused on during the meeting. Did they discuss all of these other areas, and were there people there for them and against them? Yes, sir. There was there. Were there areas that one side wanted to have discussed, and apparently the board was not that interested in those particular issues? Yes, sir. There was. But I think just about everything you've heard in here tonight was hit on somewhat. I made the statement earlier that I indicated that those two exits were not available anymore. That was an issue that was discussed in there. It was brought up by Mr. Myers, and it was not confirmed that they definitely had those entrances by Mr. Ruda. He was something that he was looking into. So at that public hearing, that was something that was discussed. But their decision record came down to the fact that as our board has changed members and everything like that, nightly rentals have been an issue for them, and they do have different views and things like that, and they continually want to hear projects that are not progressing to make sure that other projects that have been developed in the area, as things change, to make sure that there is still capacity. That other projects that are approved haven't taken those capacities as, are still being held and everything like that. I don't know that there was anything significant in this area that was presented as a major change or anything like that. I don't remember any other big projects that were in the immediate area that had been approved recently or anything like that. But they did look into a lot of things, and there were people here from both sides.
I would say you'd have to look at the tape if you wanted to know essentially or completely what was discussed. I know that the person who made the motion was very adamant about it, about all the timeshare, and he made the motion to deny, and I asked him the basis, and it was at that point that he said that it was based upon density and compatibility.
Yes, sir.
Was there a comment, or did I read in the minutes that somebody indicated that there was too many nightly rentals at this time?
I believe that was a comment that was made by the person making the motion.
I believe on both projects, whether it was clear to all the board members or not, I can't state. But on both projects, I believe there was the same amount of units, and nightly rental had been requested for the complete project both times, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's how that read.
I would challenge anybody to give me a definition of what's too many when you don't know how many there are in the first place.
Mr. Folsom?
Yes, sir.
If the Planning and Zoning Commission had the plans that were approved and supposedly are the same and chose to consider other issues, would they be, I don't want to say guilty, but would their new finding be an error of law?
Again,
if they took the old information from the 2006 application and applied some areas that they consider as important in 2008, would that constitute an error of law in choosing to include more information in their decision making?
Again, I don't want to make your decision for you. It's your determination to find whether there's been an error of law. However, those issues were raised that, again, they should not have been forced to come through and have a hearing on the same project because their permits had expired, that had been rezoned and shouldn't have to fight to keep it zoned the way it had been rezoned. That was their issue. Yeah. And the other issue is that the permit expired and they should have to come through. That's an issue for you to decide. If I were sitting where you were, I could make a very easy decision, but it's not my decision. It may be my job later, depending on which way you go.
Well, it would be my opinion after seeing the evidence that's been presented, and I do have a copy, Steve, of this finding from the Stone County that the judge gave you in favor of. There are some points that bother me because Mr. Wade's referrals to these other significant decisions of record that he's presented to us, I'm surely are aware that they are in the law, and the Stone County is already determined, and it may be very well possible that, according to Mr. Coxey, the staff was not even aware that these permits had been lapsed and weren't aware how many to even send any notifications. I would feel that perhaps the original approval by unanimous vote in 06 is the correct status. I also understand, and I could be wrong, but I understand that four of the commissioners that were on the 06 commission was also present on the 09 decision making. So they also changed their minds in midstream. But I would entertain your thoughts or entertain a motion. One way or the other.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to overturn the plan and zoning.
Would you restate that, saying that you are in favor of the appeal?
In favor of the appeal.
And to overturn the
plan and zoning. I'll second the decision.
We have a second from David. Do we have any discussion on the matter at all? Sensing you would like to vote, then, Tom, how would you vote?
For the appeal.
David, how would you vote?
For the appeal.
Bob, how would you vote?
For the appeal.
For the appeal. Jack, how would you vote?
For the appeal.
For the appeal. And the chairman would likewise also vote in favor of the appeal. So you have a unanimous decision from our group. Now, that's not to say, folks, that you do have other alternatives and steps to take, and that's the next step would be to go on to circuit court if you are so willing and desire to do that. That's the next step from this. But you will receive your letter 1 week?
Yeah.
And within 1 week from the office. Thank you. We stand adjourned. I'm sorry. We stand adjourned for 5 minute recess.
David, can I get a copy of all the stuff that's handed out to you guys for our records?
to our second case on the docket tonight. That's George Goins, 09-4.
This is the staff report for George Goins, dated June 17, 2009, case number 09-4. It's a public hearing for George Goins at 782 Clearwater Drive in Ridgedale, Oliver Township, Section 10, Township 21, Range, Section 10, Township 21, Range 22. The applicant is requesting a variance from the Taney County Development Guidance Code, Appendix 5.3.1, dealing with road frontage, and 9.1.1, dealing with setbacks. The applicant requests a setback variance on Lot 12 of Waterscape and a frontage variance for Lot 14. General description of the subject property is 87 foot by 200 foot. The adjoining properties to the development consist of residential. The subject property contains an existing single-family dwelling, and the applicant would like to create replat these lots here to allow the building of a second home. In replatting the lot, he's going to need to have these variances to bring everything into compliance, and we'll show you this on the pictures. And these variances would keep him from having to tear off part of the house, and the second variance on the road frontage would allow him the necessary frontage that he would need to comply with the development code. Summary: if the Taney County Development Guidance, our Board of Adjustment approves this variance, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the Board. Variances from Appendix 5.3.1 and 9.1.1 of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. All other provisions of the Taney County Development Code shall be met, and the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days, or the approval shall expire. As we get into this, we're going to have to determine today exactly how much footage the variance would consist of for frontage, and if you would choose to grant the zero lot line or the zero setback variance request on the one lot. This is the property in question here. This is Highway 86. If you come up 65 to 86, go down past Big Cedar Lodge, across the bridge, and start back up like you're headed out to Blue Eye. This is like the first or second street that you turn into. I believe it's Clearwater Acres, and then it falls all the way back to the back here to this particular property. Dan, to blow that up. You've seen this before one time, gentlemen. I can't remember how long ago, seven, 8 months or a year ago. There were some other things tried, but basically this is how the property sets. I will tell you this. These lines are not exactly in accordance with the plat that is filed, and we'll show you that here in just a little bit. What's being asked here is this is a house that currently exists. It does encroach on the existing lot line, I believe Lot 12, Lot 14. Mr. Goins would like to do is to redraw these lots to allow him to put a home on the lot that exists over here. Right now we will not issue a permit because this house does encroach and has basically encumbered both of these lots. If this house was sitting correctly on the lot and not encumbered in both lots and as a platted subdivision there and everything, a lot, we would, if it can meet setbacks, issue a permit to build on that. But currently, we will not do that.
Are these, how big are these lots?
The total here, I believe, he's got more than...
it's not 2 acres. No, but
there's a treatment plant here. This subdivision.
There's central sewer.
Right, so they would have to be 8,000 square foot, and they do meet and exceed that 8,000 square foot limit.
Even as they'd be redrawn?
When he redraws, yes, sir. So, Dan, let's go on to the next.
That's better.
Yeah, so this is kind of, you know, the dimensions that you see and everything like that. But let me point out to you this right here, and that was different on what the county has. 39.35 feet here, 21.37 here, which would give him about 60.88.
He needs 70, right?
The requirement is 70. You know, keep that in mind as we go on through this. And so this is how it exists. If we go to the next one here, what we have here is, of course, the red would be encompassing all of the property. The blue dotted line would be one of the lines that's going to be removed and changed. The green would be how they would replat this lot to to accommodate. In so doing, this corner of that still encroaches. And the reason this would be drawn like this is because he's got to have road frontage here, so he's got to incorporate this part of this lot here in order to have the frontage that he needs to allow the building and the access to this property. You got another one?
The road dead ends right there. I mean,
right, right here, this road dead ends, and when all of this was platted, that was acceptable.
Yeah, and the road on the short side, 39 foot dead ends.
What you probably need to be aware of is this is the platted road right here, and you notice how it cuts off. This line right here is the core take line. Got a little bit of question about. This is a hard surface road. It goes down to, I believe it's hard surface all the way down to their boat dock right here and everything. We cannot grant him the right to use this as a driveway onto core land. We cannot grant him any use of the core land and everything. But the current road frontage. This would be the road coming down to the dock here.
This is where 39 feet ends about here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a
21 feet here?
Is that a building? What is that in the corner there?
Right here.
Yeah.
That is the sewer treatment plant.
Okay.
This is the community swimming pool.
Oh, I had them mixed up.
You definitely don't want to be swimming down here. Okay.
I'm sure you would have figured it out.
Yeah. Well, this is a. You would never think about jumping in there because it's not full of water or anything like that by any means.
It's all for the pit stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, is that all our slides?
That's all. Let me like to remind you though that there can be some error in these lines here.
Right.
It's not set in concrete.
You say you can't from the lot that you'd be creating that you're taking some property from to give to the other. You wouldn't be able. What frontage would it have?
Right now, it has the frontage here on this road that's part of the subdivision, which I know it doesn't, it doesn't really meet our minimum standard. Of course, when this house was built, that standard did not exist.
Right, but if you're going to redraw the lot lines, right, you'd need a variance on both.
That is correct. Because you would be taking some, you would need.
That's why we have requested the variance on both.
I'm sorry. Okay,
we'll get to that right now. Let's George and Bill and Jerry Harris. Would you all please stand? I'll swear you in. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Help you God. Thank you, Mr. Goins. You have the floor.
This is not going to be nearly as complicated as the one before.
There's a pointer up there, Mr. Goins, if you'd like to use it, I believe. A black one there with a little red button on it.
Yeah. This is not drawn exactly as we're proposing it now, but it's close. So what we're proposing to do, this Mr. Preston owns this lot and this house. What we're proposing to do is I'm going to trade him this square footage for this square footage down here. And as close as we can keep it, square foot for square foot. That'll give me the street frontage down here, and that'll allow him to keep his carport and corner of his house, assuming that it's approved. We made application last year, and I was out of town working, so I don't know exactly what transpired at the meeting, but from my understanding, people from Waterscape showed up and had the complaint that I was not meeting their 10-foot setbacks in their covenants with the new structure. I didn't really realize they had 10-foot setbacks. So the new drawing here, as you'll see on the big one that Eddie has there, is I have 10-foot setbacks all the way around. So there should be no complaints from Waterscape on setbacks other than the zero clearance we're looking at here for Mr. Preston's house. And if you go back to that other slide, would you please? I think they've already set a precedent. No, the aerial. I think they've already set a precedent. If you look, this garage right here is completely over the line. And it's been allowed to stay there. And if you,
these lines.
I understand.
Parallax era.
I understand.
My garage may or may not be on the line.
But I don't think it has a 10.
Plus or minus 30 feet on these drawings.
Yeah. We don't feel it has a 10-foot setback. Also, I'm not sure there's a 10-foot setback down here for the association's sewer treatment plant, which I have no complaint about that because I want to hook onto it also. And another complaint that Waterscape Association had was about the hookup. And after some thought about it, I agree with them. I sold my hookup rights with that house. So if I want to hook up again, I need to pay the original hookup cost, which I've agreed to do. So from that point, that's all I have for you. Thank you.
Let's go back, if we can, to the other drawing right there. Isn't there enough room right now to give you another 7-foot setback for Mr. Preston's house? So that you wouldn't have a zero lot line?
Is it possible that this could be maybe brought out like this and back up or something like that? There.
Or maybe not go in full, but maybe half of the 7 foot to just get a little bit of clearance on.
I believe this lot when drawn is it comes out to be 20. Do we have a square footage in this new lot? This lot here?
No, if you want to see my corner here, this lot and this lot, they're both about, I think, one's 2647, one's 2648. So they're trying to swap equally this amount through here for this amount over here. I don't know what the actual square footage is of each lot presently. If you brought this out more, they would be more land be given up in this area versus this. You probably have to adjust over here. They're trying to balance out where one gives up, one takes the same amount.
If you go 3.5 down, 3.5 over, you don't adjust it, so you've got some clearance.
Well,
that corner will kind of...
Another issue, Mr. Preston and I are personal friends, and what we're wanting to do here, and the reason for leaving that in there, is we're wanting to make like a circle drive. So we needed this space for a drive. We've got the street up here, but there's very little room in here to turn around or do anything. So we want to eventually put a drive through here. Is the reason for leaving that amount of footage in between there that we have.
Okay. Mr. Preston, your comments?
Well, of course, my purpose is to try to keep from having to remove part of my house, but if the board determines that there needs to be some setback of 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, I'll chop that much off the house if I have to. If you tell me that's not an approved deal, it's an existing structure. It's been there for a long time. The same person owned both lots for a while, and then it ended up where I owned one and George owned the other one.
I was going to ask you how do we get to this spot to begin with?
It's a big problem. I bought the one lot.
12 or 14?
12.
With the house on it?
Yeah, with the house on it. Knowing that there was a problem with the carport, but I've never been through anything like this, and so I didn't know, that what all you had to go through to get it approved. You know, they say, well, those are old existing lots, and you can build a house on each one, but if you change the property lines, then you have to meet the planning and zoning requirements, and so that's what I'm trying to save the carport. It's an open carport, wide open on three sides, and
we have a video of the property if you'd like to see. We'll take you around the whole property.
That would be interesting.
Let me ask one question before you go, if you don't mind. This is actually part of the house, though, and not part of the carport.
That's a storage building.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, it's a storage building that's added to the part of the carport.
Attached to the house.
Because it appears that, that as it sits right now, the
it looks like it's part of the inside of the house, but actually it's not. It's an outside storage building.
Okay. Could we go back? Yeah. Could we go back to the film? I saw it awful fast.
Real fast, sir.
I apologize.
And just click. We're going to start down at the bottom of the road here. This is down by the treatment plant. Now, that's the carport mentioned. We're going to go up to the top, though, and I believe you can see it better up there. This is the road that's down here at the bottom where he is requesting a variance for the access to the slot that they would be creating. As you go around, of course, pretty dense trees and everything. This is the road as it goes down to the dock there. That's actually core property there, probably about where that everything. That's the however you want to use it. That's where it is, and everything. And then this all up through here would be the lot. And of course, you can see how it's kind of steep up there near the top and everything. So we're going to take you up the road and around the corner, and the house that he was pointing out that he feels like is probably encroaching. We'll come up on your left here in just a second after we make this turn and head up the road. No, I believe Benita was filming this time. Were you or were I?
It looks like you were.
Okay, maybe it was me.
See that left.
But you know, it's.
I don't think you missed any bugs.
I try to keep the windshield clean for you guys.
That's the garage there. That's in question.
That's the garage. Now this road goes. This is the road right here. Okay, that exists out there. And then, Dan, could you pause that right there? Well, actually, if we get back up just a little bit, I want to be able to look at the carport as he's mentioned it. If I just grab it while it's running and move it back, it'll do that too. We'll probably go back. I just wanted them to be able to get a good look at this carport.
Could you stop it right there? That carport, see, you just barely see the edge of my carport. That carport there, that used to be a carport, that part of it there. It was all wide open. And, of course, you can see it sitting right on the property, right on the road, or appears to be. I bet you money it is, right on the property line. He totally redid that last year and closed it all in, put all new siding, new rock on it, and the association that we're in said nothing to this person.
And from the county standpoint, if you were to take like your carport like it sits now and want to close it, you wouldn't get a permit from us either.
I know. You'd have to go to planning and zoning. But
you would not. No, you would not because your footprint exists and there's already a roof there. You can close that in, and you do not need a permit from us. So he would not need a permit from us to do that. Now, whether your association takes exception to that or not, it's not for me to say.
Some of our association is here, and they may take objection to my zero setback. And, and there was nothing said about this, I assume.
Okay, let's drive on, Dan.
Say wait a minute.
When we get down here, just about right there. And then that'll give them a look at it. And we'll take you down a little bit further because I think we do get a shot down the hill, but that's the carport in question. It would actually be the back side of that carport that is what's encroaching on that. So we'll take you on down here and we're going to turn to the left. So the house is going to go out of view, but I want you to see the top part of this lot. It'll stop there, I think. So, and then, of course, what you see way down in the corner there was the
Balsam pool.
Yes. So.
Was that a deck you were putting on? No, tearing it off. It's all gone now except two boards, and they will disappear this weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. There was about a 12-foot deck there, and I've been tearing it off, and it's all gone now, just virtually.
So if a couple boards. If I can make sure that this is clear in my mind, I've made some calculations here. This lot is going to need a variance for road frontage because we're replatting. Because right now it only has 55.99. And to replat, you have to come up to current county standards, 70 foot. So we'd actually need to grant for this lot because that road doesn't extend down to the, well, it does go down here a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The file plat shows that there's 56-foot frontage on lot 12.
Okay, so this, if they pull that down to there, then this lot here will have all of the frontage that it needs.
Right now,
it has 55.99 plus the additional, so he does need a variance there. This lot needs a variance because if you add all of this together, it comes up to be 60.88 feet, and so they would need a variance of, to round it off, 10 feet. You know, or you can take him 9 point, like you say, 1-2. 10 feet's a little easier to measure for me. And then, unless they can correct something here, they're asking you to allow this corner of this house to have a zero lot line, no setback for that corner. And does that sound correct to you, Mr. Goldman?
Yes, that's exactly the zero. Setback that we're asking for there is up to the cement, where the wooden deck has been torn off already.
Yeah.
Does anything hang over on the top of that? Because when we measure from whatever sticks out the furthest.
The overhang of the roof?
I don't know.
I
mean, regardless, if we're going to, I mean, you may have to redraw this line a little bit, but what you're asking for is a zero setback for lot 12.
So if
on one corner,
So if there's an overhang on the roof, then we may have to.
You're going
to
have
a little bit more, or take the overhang off. One of the other.
Where's my corner?
Roof showing on the
one. Yeah, right here.
Right there, that would have to be your measuring point.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Unless there's any questions.
Thank you, Jerry Harris.
My name's Jerry Harris, and I'm a 14-year resident of Waterscape Subdivision, and I got the short straw to speak on behalf of the Waterscape Association. And I feel like I can speak on behalf of them because at the last hearing we presented a petition asking for any variances concerning these lots to be denied. And that petition was signed by every resident of Waterscape except the two parties involved. Before I start, though, I want to address some of the things that George and Bill talked about, and some really doesn't involve this board, but I think I should address them since they've come up. One is the carport that had been converted to a garage. That's probably been there since the mid-60s to early 70s, probably before there was planning and zoning, before we had covenants, even though I know you're not concerned about our subdivisions covenants at all, but that was brought up, so I felt like I had to address it. And also, we believe that the amount of frontage at the bottom that's labeled Clearwater there, because of the core property, there's only really about 38 feet there, not 60 feet as the previous drawing said, because 30 feet of that is budding core property, not county road.
Or
right there.
And it's 39.35, because this, I was telling you, this road easement does end here, and this is core property.
The 60.88 that's been mentioned several times is taking into consideration core property. So really,
is that a public road, though?
And
does the road continue onto core property?
Yes.
That's why we looked at it and said.
I'm sorry. Just only one at a time, please. You know. And Mr. Harris has the floor.
Yeah, just to point that out, I don't know what applies to the rules, but I just wanted to point that out. You all can decide what the right rule is to go with that. But the other thing, of course, is the zero setback that we really what's happening here is George is trying to put a house in a place that was never intended to be a house. These two lots have been deeded together for probably 30 years. The house was built, straddled the lot, as you can do with an internal lot line, without worrying about setbacks or any of those things. It's never been intended for that, and you know they've come up with the idea of doing this to try to use one lot to build two houses, you know, as a means to make it cheaper. I don't know what it's been exactly, but to make it cheaper to build a house, I guess. But it's just violating all of the setback rules. You know, the 70-foot roadway frontage is obvious there. I mean, the more that happens, it seems like the more variances that are going to be needed. And I don't know if it was said previously, but, you know, this has been denied once before, and the driveway thing is the same. It hasn't changed. What has changed is they shrunk the house a little bit, because originally they were asking for variances basically on all corners of the new structure. They were right up against the property line. So they shrunk the house a little bit to avoid that request for variance, but the driveway variance hasn't changed from the last time we were all here. But what I really want to talk about is to address the things concerning property value. You know, the use of our property, the enjoyment of our property by Water State residents, and whether or not this is detrimental to the public good. You guys hear that stuff all the time, but that's really the grounds of why we're opposed to this whole thing. The water treatment plant has been discussed. That's been there again probably for 30 years. About 5 years ago, that structure was rebuilt, brought up to DNR standards, had an engineer involved, and a lot of money was spent. At that time, the engineer and DNR wanted to know how many houses were hooked to it, how many residents were in each house, and whether there were any empty lots with the potential to add residents. And we gave them that information and told them, no, there were no empty lots, because we never dreamed this was going to take place. So we have a question of whether or not, you know, the sewer treatment plant is capable of handling more input. That's our question of detriment to the public good, since the effluent from that runs into Table Rock, directly into Table Rock Lake. The other couple of issues that we have is that the resident is close to our common area. The swimming pool that you saw and the land behind the swimming pool is public area. This lot and the lot behind it are Waterscape Association. You know, this house encroaches, is close also to the pool. Stick another house here. You know, that this is a public area with a picnic table. It's not much of a picnic table, but there's one there. And our well sits there also. For the subdivision. You know, the wells, like right in here. So, like I said, it's sort of an encroachment on the community's enjoyment of a public area. On a technical note, a couple of things I'd like to mention is the petition I saw that was signed by George requesting all of these things was signed just by George. And, you know, Bill owns lot 12. He's the one that should be requesting the variance for the zero setback. That's his house, his lot, not lot 14. So I'm not sure if technical things are important or not. But another thing that I probably shouldn't point out, but I will, that I find kind of interesting, is you're voting tonight to approve that driveway in the back. And a week or two ago, a culvert's been installed and covered over, and it's all ready for the driveway, even though you guys haven't voted on it yet.
That's my drive. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep.
So I find that kind of curious, too.
I'm sorry.
Just curious. Yeah, that's all.
Do you have an answer from the DNR about the capability of that system?
We have not checked into that yet. We're kind of in the process of it, but no, we don't have.
When they update, they normally update with a range. This means that this right. meeting, did they give you a range when you did that?
I'm not aware of that.
Because normally they don't, you know,
None of the residences are going to be static anyway. They'll be changing the number of people too. So I would imagine.
And you have some people that are year round, and some people that aren't.
That's correct.
Yeah, but what I said was factual, though. That's precisely what they asked us,
and precisely
the information that we gave them. And I'm not aware. It would seem logical to have a range, no doubt.
Well, of course, if you don't have capacity, if DNR says no, you know you're over capacity for what you have in there, you wouldn't be allowed to issue a hookup permit or anything like that.
We've not hooked anybody on new, so it's it would be a, we really don't know how that works. It'd be a new experience.
Part of our requirements for issuing a building permit for a residential structure is that we have a permit from the sewer, or whoever's handling the sewer in that area, so that would be one of the requirements. So that is something that would have to be found out. And I would suppose that if there was a study that would have to be done, that you would allow Mr. Goins to commission that and to do that.
But again, the things we're concerned about: zero setback. These two residents are friends. The next two residents may not be friends. That zero setback is going to be there forever.
And that is correct. It does travel with the property.
Yeah.
Until that structure might be torn down. And then they could always put a provision in there that once that structure is removed, that goes away. And as the house moves toward compliance, we don't normally back up on that. But.
Thank you. Mr. Preston, I'm a little bit confused. Did you own lot 12 and 14 together at one time, or did you own lot... Oh, so you were really the owner of both those lots at one time?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
I was the owner of those lots with the agreement that I would return it back to George, lot 14, which I did.
I don't know, how does George get into this before that, then?
I owned both of them before, but I moved to Florida to take some construction work, and I sold them to Bill. With the agreement, personal friends agreement, that when I returned from Florida, I would purchase 14 back and build next to it, which is the point we're at.
And the house was already built on lot 12?
Before I ever bought them. I bought them in 96, and that house was already there then.
Okay. I'm a little clearer.
Well, that house was built that fit that lot. I'm surprised that Mr. Harris doesn't know that was a little cabin on lot 12. When that original plat came out, that house has been added on three times. It didn't have a carport on it when it was originally built.
Well, but it's over the lot line.
It is now.
Yes. Well, all right.
Okay. He said the house was built on the lot originally.
Well,
it's been added on to, and now it's built across.
Well, we need to be where we are today, not how it got there. I just want to know how the ownership came about.
That's exactly what.
Okay. Mr. Harris. I mean, Mr. Harris.
May I say something?
Yes.
I don't want to cause an argument back to you, but some of these things are being said publicly are true. One is, George, you saying he owned the property, I don't believe that George ever owned the property.
You're right.
You keep saying I owned, I did, and George has never owned lot 12 and lot 14 together. Sort of irrelevant, but it's not factual. I have copies of the deeds of trust to show you who has owned this property.
I can clarify.
George never owned this.
Okay. Please clarify.
Now, in 2007, lot 14 is in both their names, but that's only been his only ownership of either of those lots is in 2007. When lot 14 became Bill and his wife sold lot 14 to Bill and George. But Mr. Goins has never owned those lot 3.
Yes, sir.
I'd like a minute for some rebuttal on some of this, please.
You had the floor.
Number one.
On the sewage treatment plant. I lived in that house at the time that sewage treatment plant was refurbished. And I talked to the engineer from Green River Engineering. I told him there's three vacant lots still within this association that can someday be built on, and the sewage treatment plant needs to be sized accordingly. And as far as me not owning those, no, Jerry's right, and I can clarify that. And I keep saying I owned them. In my mind, I did. What happened was I went through a divorce. My ex wanted the house and property in Christian County. I said, okay, you can have it. So I'm looking for a place to live. I find this place, and I go to buy it, and my divorce attorney says, no, you don't buy anything right now in your name. Anything you buy prior to the judge signing the paper on the divorce is marital property. My sister, who is a widow, and we didn't have any in-laws to mess with, owns quite a bit of rental property. So I went to my sister, I said, sis, how would you like to own a rental house on the lake? So that's how that came about. It was bought in my sister's name. So as far as me never owning property, no, I never owned property. And what else? I had something else in mind there a minute ago. Oh, he said that we're trying to make two lots out of one that was never intended for another house to be built there. Those are two lots were platted. I think if you pull the plat,
the plat's on the table there.
How many years old?
December 6, 1968, it was platted.
1968, it was platted as two lots. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
Just a question. What happens if you try and move the carport? Since you guys are talking about a circle drive or whatever, is there another possibility for that?
It's about 6 foot thick cement. And the roof is attached to the house.
Move the carport, you mean?
Yeah.
So it's got a retaining wall on
it. Yeah, the lower end of it's about 6 foot thick cement, oh, okay. And the roof is attached to the house. So it's okay. It'd be quite an undertaking.
Okay.
Not that it's impossible.
As I've heard developers say, anything is possible. Do you have the dollars? Can we see the slide with the numbers on it again? That's a good one.
Anything that we can answer for you, anything like that, or we have both property owners represented here.
Well, I'm trying to decide whether what we're granting is going to be a mere grant of a privilege rather than
right. And I understand that. I just want to make sure that I haven't left you with questions about the property or anything like that.
And basically, what you have is a property owner, however it came about, that owns two lots with a house across the lot line, and he wants to sell one of the lots to somebody else and create a problem and have us solve it.
I don't see why you couldn't just deed enough footage on that one corner on the that part of lot 14.
Right here.
Uh-huh. And don't have any problem. Irregardless of trying to keep the square footage balanced or not, it isn't really our issue. But where does that leave him as far as the...
When when he comes into an issue where you're replatting, changing lots, sizes, or anything like that, then our code book requires that it come up to current standards. Current standards say that they have to have minimum 8,000 square foot lot when they're on a centralized sewer system.
Well, they got 15,000.
But they got plenty of room for lots, and they have to have 70 foot of frontage on the road. Now, in order to get his frontage, you know, in order to fix this lot, he's got to replat. When he replats, he has to come up to current county code. When he comes up to current county code, he can't get his road frontage unless he includes this part of this lot into the lot that needs the frontage. Otherwise, all he's going to have is about 20 feet up here? 15 feet, I can't remember what it was.
I'm sorry.
The frontage that existed right there was about 15 feet.
This one was
17.8. Yeah, it's not on that drawing. I didn't have that information.
Yeah, this shows, yeah, it shows it to be eight, crosswise 17, but the long was 18.66.
Can I make one more point? I forget. As far as that core property down there, we talked to the board, and they have no problem with it.
So what's actually being asked for is about a 10-foot variance from our frontage requirements, and of course you know what's going on here. We won't allow him to replat unless he can meet the requirements of the code, and right now that cannot happen without a variance.
Actually, when you're replatting it, you need not only the variance over there, you need the variance on this road, and you need the variance for the lot line.
Just did some quick computing. Lot 12 is about a little over 11,000 square feet. 8,000 is minimum. So.
Well, they've got down, when they cut it off, it's going to have 9,700 or almost 9,800 square feet, according to this dimension here.
Okay. That's still 1,800 feet over, so.
Yeah, that's which is why that extra 7 foot on that one corner can't be solved with just extending that line a little bit.
Well, that does, you know, that you may view as privilege, because he's saying we don't want to do that because we want to put a driveway in here. So that would be your determination on that.
Well, can't the driveway run on the
property? I'm not saying it can. I'm saying that's why he's stating he wants
the driveway to be on.
They can share a driveway.
They can share the property line on the driveway, does he?
This will be the, in your packet, this will be the front of the house we're proposing to build and everything. So there's actually 16.9 feet between there. And I'm not making the case for or against. I'm just want to make sure that, you know, that there is 16 feet here. You know, if y'all deem that he needs to, if you're so inclined to head in that direction, you would, and you want him to have that 7 foot.
From the new structure, what we got on the back side of the new structure to here?
Well, that would to where?
The setback on the.
That's what I was saying. That's not.
There's a deck on the back. The gentlemen, I'll let you look at this if you like. It may help us.
We've got to resolve this. It's a little bit time-consuming.
On the back of the house is a deck, right, which is why he can't move the house back, because he would be in the 10-foot setback required by the subdivision then.
Then you can do it, you know the terminology, But as far as the road going, the road can still go through there. You guys do the easement, something between you or whatever. So the property line, as far as the road goes, would mean really nothing.
I understand what you're saying. And if that's necessary, we can do that. My only thinking there was that 17 feet is not much space with the front from the front door of the house.
No, but what I'm saying, though, you can still use the property, the 7 foot, for your road.
Right.
No matter if property, I mean, we've got a house built through the middle of the property.
There's no required setback from a driveway.
You know, the driveway does not matter. You can put the driveway right down the middle of the property line. As long as you do.
I understand that, and that's what I say. If necessary, we can do that.
You still don't have the same amount of space between the house and your carport. You don't have the same amount of space.
I hear that. I understand that. But I do have to agree with Jerry that at some token, some period of time, I might have a heart attack tomorrow, or Bill might have a heart attack tomorrow. Somebody else want to own one of those, they want to put up a fence on the property line, and you got less than 17 feet from your front door to.
Not if you grant an easement.
Mr. Goins, could I make an observation to you?
Why can't you redesign the house? I mean, that seems to be
the driveway.
It's
the driveway.
We can do
that. And no matter what we do here, there's still some covenants and restrictions that you may have to deal with.
Just because they would grant you this doesn't mean that your homeowners association still could not take you to court and block this because you don't meet their 10-foot setback.
If we get back
That's not our concern. I want you to be aware of that.
If you get back less than 10 feet from the front of my structure, yes.
From this existing structure, when you make this new lot line. Right now, this structure is in compliance with their, and that's not our argument to make. I'm just trying to tell you. You may achieve what you want to with this board, and then find out that is not going to be sufficient because you may have another hurdle to overcome by trying to get, maximize everything there. It may behoove you to reconsider this line here to avoid some future complications.
Well, that's one of the reasons we were leaving it at 16.9. There's no question about me having a 10-foot setback. The other structure, we'll deal with. If the board approves it here, we'll deal with whatever comes up after that.
I'm going to make a motion. You're going to have variance on the front, on the. You're going to have that road over, right? No matter what.
Yes.
If they're going to build another house.
This side here will actually extend down to here, so it will have the 70 foot.
But they'll need variance from you. I don't know if I can make a motion to deny this or make a motion to say that it's okay if they do not. I make a motion to deny as presented.
I would second that.
We have a motion made and seconded to deny the request as presented. Any discussion?
Just a question, Dave. Are you allowing for or leaving a door open for them?
Well,
or.
Yes, they're
going
to have to redraw that.
Well, I don't know that he leaves the door open.
They
can come back or not come back with a different plan. But
okay, that's okay.
Okay. Since we want to vote, then David, how would you vote? Jack, how about you?
I would vote for the motion.
For the motion to deny.
For the motion to deny.
For the motion to deny.
Okay. The same. So you're going to have to come back with a new proposal.
Okay. What? I guess.
I don't know what that. That's your. Yeah. But you could redesign the house if you wanted to. I mean, that would be, you know, this is one house plan. There's probably several others.
It was said, I mean, we discussed it, so about all we can say about it. Right. It was brought up in the topics.
Do you have minutes to approve?
Yeah.
I have no other new business for you, but I don't know what else is on your agenda. You think you have minutes to approve?
We have the minutes of three meetings, I believe. August the 15th, the 22nd, and June the 11th.
Are June the 11th minutes in there? I don't think that special meeting is not in there.
Did you not have a special meeting?
We had a special meeting, but I don't know that you've had the minutes yet.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
If we change something here, that we think...
The previous before the
special meeting.
Yeah.
You need to see Eddie.
Eddie will help you with that.
All right. Thank you.
I made a motion to approve the minutes of the two meetings before the emergency meeting.
All right.
I'll say
Motion been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion to adjourn.
Got a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Aye. Okay. Well, gentlemen, we thank you very much.